Next item on the agenda is public hearing, consideration of multiple proposals to eliminate overfishing in the blue crab fisheries. The proposed measures pertain to coal rings, season limits, minimum size limits, Pila crabs, blue crab sanctuary, winter dredge fishery, and the use of agents. Mr. Travelstead.
Before we get into the presentation, staff has put in front of you a number of packages for your consideration today. The first two sheets on top were two letters that were just handed to me by Mr. Jenkins, and that's why they're not on blue paper. The second package is some of the latest public comments that have come in just within the last few days. We'll have a summary of these for you shortly. The next package is on white paper. It is a summary of some VIMS research on fish predation on blue crabs. Summarizes the work that was done in 2004 and 2005, and I know it's going to come up today. Sent to you last week. And then the final package on blue paper are the regulations that conform to the staff recommendations that you'll hear today. Last month, you received a detailed presentation on the science behind the problems with the blue crab and a concise report of the Regulatory Review Committee. So I'm not going to go back through all of that. That is part of the record, and I think you're quite familiar with that and have seen and read the reports. We're going to present a fairly brief report here today to generally quickly summarize the status of the resource and then get into the details of the staff recommendations and try to provide you with some sense of value in savings or conservation that the various measures will produce so that you'll be able to compare them against one another. As you know, the resource is not in good shape, and I tried to find a slide that would sort of summarize, in part at least, why we have some of the problems that we have with blue crabs, and this is what I came up with. There's barely a day on the calendar where blue crabs are not exploited by a fishery. We start in January and February and March with the dredge fishery. Immediately upon its closure, we enter the hard crab pot and the feeler pot fishery, which continues all the way to the end of November. And then we pick right back up with the dredge fishery again. So at this point, there's no respite for the blue crab. That's not all of the problems, obviously, but when you add on top of that the things that are occurring in the environment, whether it's poor water quality or poor dissolved oxygen or increases in predation by various species, you enter into that much more of a severe problem. Keep in mind, too, a couple of points, that the crabs spawn from about the middle of May to the middle of September, and much of that season is now closed to harvest of crabs in the spawning section sanctuary. So as we go through the measures that are proposed, I think you need to keep this in mind. Those measures that reduce the overharvest across longer periods of time and across more than one fishery tend to be more valuable, whereas those measures that affect a small portion of the fishery, while they do result in some savings, and we'll provide those numbers to you, tend to be less valuable. So a closure of the fishery for a week is obviously less valuable than a closure for a month. Closure for a month is less valuable than perhaps raising the minimum size limit, which affects harvest throughout the season. The other thing that occurs is, biologically, crabs become more valuable as they approach the spawning season, so that crabs in April and May that have survived the previous fall's fishery, have survived the winter dredge fishery, and are now making their way to the spawning grounds are significantly more biologically valuable than a crab, say, in September, that is probably, you know, an adult crab that's already had a chance to spawn. And that's why we've proposed some of the measures that we'll go through momentarily. The other dilemma that we face is that in almost every case where crabs are very biologically valuable, they're also quite valuable to the fishery. So the crabs caught typically in March and April bring the highest price to the fishermen. They're also the most biologically valuable crabs. So there's a trade-off there. When you try to save those most valuable crabs, you do tend to economically affect the fishery in a way that you would perhaps prefer not to. And that sort of leads you to measures that are across the board, across all fisheries and across longer periods of time. As we said last month, catches are approaching an all-time low in Chesapeake Bay. This is the combined harvest for both Maryland and Virginia. We know now, based on the latest landings here in Virginia, that harvest from Chesapeake Bay and its tributaries is the lowest that we have seen, around 18.5 million pounds. One other interesting point. Up until a few years ago, these were the only data that we had to manage the fishery. And trying to manage a fishery based solely on harvest is virtually impossible. You can see that there are ups and downs. When you reach periods of low harvest, almost immediately they're followed by increases in harvest. We know that obviously in the last 5 or 6 years, harvest have been quite low, but we also know effort was down. And so one might think, well, it's all right for harvest to be that low because there are fewer people in the fishery now. But about 2 years ago, the scientists created the control rule and started to produce information that told us a whole lot more about this fishery than harvest ever could tell us. So we have, in many ways, abandoned the use of harvest to tell us about the status of the resource and now start to look at things like total abundance of crabs in the population, and recruitment and exploitation rates. The point of this information here is to show you that we have multiple fisheries, that the hard crab pot fishery accounts for the biggest portion of the harvest, but that's not to say that the dredge harvest and the pila crab harvest aren't important. These are in numbers of crabs, not pounds, so they are more directly related to the exploitation rate that we will talk about. What this graph or what this table does not tell you is crabs that die and are discarded or wasted as a result of the harvesting practices. For instance, in the dredge fishery, we know there are times of year where wastage is extremely high, 50 to 75%. I have heard reports of fishermen harvesting 20 barrels of crabs by dredge, only to be able to keep 4 or 5 barrels. The rest are cut up and unusable and discarded. So the numbers that you see on this table are the numbers that we relate to exploitation, but they don't tell the whole story. Again, I would note that 12 out of the last 16 years, once you add the 2007 data, which don't appear here, 12 out of the last 16 years, we have fished beyond the target exploitation rate of 46%. 7 out of the last 10 years, we have exceeded the overfishing threshold of 53%. Again, what you don't see in this graph is unreported commercial harvest, recreational harvest, and wastage in the fisheries, so that all of the peaks that you see here in this figure are actually higher in reality than what these data are showing. So in some of these cases where we were just barely above the target, but not quite above the threshold. In reality, this graph is higher because there are fishermen who don't report accurately, because there's wastage of crabs that is not reported, and because this does not contain recreational harvest. It just adds to the severity of the problem that we're facing. If you break out those data and look at harvest by the sex of the crab, you will see that it is the female crab that is being consistently overfished. And that's why most of the measures we are recommending to you now and in the future are designed to protect a significant portion of the female part of the population. And that's not to say that we can ignore the harvest of the male crab. Abundance overall is down, and down significantly, and so we also need to take action to protect the male crabs. And this graph gets at that point. This is the abundance of crabs since 1990. And since 91, that peak there, we've seen a 70% reduction in the abundance of the older crabs, one plus crabs. This is what has us so concerned. We're basically flatlining just above the threshold, and further excessive harvest or an environmental event that we have no control over could push us below that red line. That's a point where we have never been, and a point that the scientists tell us they cannot guarantee a recovery of the stock if it falls below that line. Again, the control rule, you've seen this many times, and the point here is that in spite of some 14 years of regulating the fishery, we have not seen a movement to the right of this figure, which would indicate improvements of abundance, improvements in abundance. The good news is those regulations probably prevented us from moving to further to the left, further beyond this vertical red line, the point where we never want to go. We have received a rather large amount of public comment on the measures that have been advertised. In fact, we received a total of 256 comments from individuals. This is quite a bit more than we normally get on issues. And there is support for virtually all of the measures that the staff has recommended, including opening up the cull rings, increasing the peeler minimum size to 3.5 inches, closing the sanctuary an additional 2 weeks, capping the dredge fishery participation, controlling the use of agents. By and far, the comments are very positive in support. And these comments came from both people in the fisheries as well as citizens who are interested in seeing this resource recover for the long term. In addition to the comments on the actual proposals, there were a rather large number of comments on matters that have not yet been advertised for public comment. But there clearly is an interest in the public in taking some bold steps to ensure that this resource is regenerized and sustainable for the long term. To get directly to the staff recommendations, staff is recommending your approval of all 7 of the proposed regulations that have been advertised for public comment. The first of those was cull rings. Current regulations require 2 cull rings in every crab pot. One, a larger ring, is 2 5/16 inch in diameter. The other is 2 3/16 inch in diameter. Current regulation allows that larger ring to be closed when you're fishing in the main stem of the bay, in Pocomoke and Tanager Sounds, and on the seaside of Accomack and Northampton counties. The advisory committee supported this measure on a vote of 7-2 with 3 abstentions. and staff is recommending it here for you today. Opening that larger cull ring provides up to 7.4% additional escapement of hard crabs, some of which will survive to become a part of the spawning stock. If you look at it in terms of numbers of crabs that potentially can be saved, and this is the currency that I'm going to give you on each measure to help you compare, there are an estimated 3.6 million crabs that potentially could be saved by this measure. Now, obviously, if a female crab escapes through the 2 5/16-inch cull ring and grows a little bit and crawls into someone else's pot and is harvested, it's not saved. But not every one of those crabs over the course of the whole year are going to do that. Some of them are going to survive and spawn in the summertime and add to the spawning potential of the stock. But of those 3.6 million crabs, 2.9 million of them are female crabs. And again, that's where our emphasis has been. Season limits. We are proposing two changes to the season limits. Instead of starting the fishery on March 17th, we're proposing starting it on April 1st. Instead of ending on November 30, we're recommending an ending of the pot fishery 2 weeks early on November 15th. The advisory committee was opposed to these measures, primarily the April 1 start, and again, primarily because the value to the catcher of those early season crabs is so high. I mean, they command a premium price at dockside, and the fishermen feel like they would be giving up too much to go with that April 1 closure. We would note that fishermen, hard crab potters, have not been allowed to crab, hard crab pot, in March since 1994, with the exception of 1 year, and that was last year. There was an agreement that they could open. We would open the fishery on March 17th, but that only occurred last year. So there's no long-term history on back to 1994 of fishing during that time. In terms of the number of crabs that potentially could be saved, 1.2 million crabs from the early season closure, 900,000 of which are females. The November closure, about 700,000 crabs, almost 500,000 of which are female crabs. Again, the March time period is just 2 months away from the spawning season. And so crabs saved at that point need only survive for a few more months to become part of that spawning stock. The Pila crab minimum size was a measure that was opposed by the advisory committee. It is recommended by staff. We are proposing a couple of things here, that we start the season with a 3 1/4-inch minimum size. Currently we're at 3 inches. That stay in place until July 16th, at which point the minimum size increases to 3 1/2 inches. This is one of the most powerful measures that we are proposing. It almost immediately results in increased spawning potential for the population because it's across the board and it's every day of the season this is in place, allowing those crabs to get larger and potentially move into the spawning stock. In terms of number of peeler crabs that are potentially saved, at 3 1/4 inches all year long, you would save about 2.7 million crabs. At 3 1/2 inches all year, you would save 3.6 million crabs. So it's a little bit higher than some of the prior measures, and obviously quite valuable. The staff proposal is also consistent with the regulations already in place in Maryland. And they believe it is a provision that is working well for them. At the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, they have in place a 3 1/2-inch minimum size year-round. They don't bother to bump it up in the middle of the summer. One of the complaints that we heard from industry about minimum sizes on peelers, first was that when you increase the minimum, there's a loss of product or potential product. This will affect the harvest of mediums and hotels. But we're also told by others in the industry that the market for those size crabs is very poor, and so the economic impact will be less than what you might think. The other complaint we hear from industry is that we don't like inspectors going through our harvest of peeler crabs because that tends to agitate the crabs and they bite each other, and that results in some mortality or wastage of the product. And we agree with that. That is the case. And that is why we are proposing a very specific inspection protocol to minimize this handling mortality. And they are described in the regulation as, so the Marine police officer would select one container of peeler crabs for inspection. There would be a tolerance of 10 crabs per U.S. bushel for the undersized. If they're in a container that is other than a bushel, the tolerance would be 5%. So if you had in a small tray or something, or a gallon jug or whatever, that had 50 crabs in it, 2.5, 3 of them could be undersized. If they're in a bushel, it would be 10. The officer would select a single container for inspection, and that's all he would go through. But if he finds a violation in that one container, then the entire catch of peeler crabs would be returned alive to the water. So it minimizes the damage to the product in response to industry, but violations are dealt with severely by returning the entire catch of peeler crabs to the water. The peeler crab definition is one that has received a significant amount of debate. Currently, the code allows crabs that have the white sign or about a week or 2 weeks, away, depending upon water temperature, away from shedding to be harvested as peeler crabs. In many cases, particularly in the warmer summer months, the harvest of these crabs, because you have to keep them alive so much longer before they shed, there's wastage. Some of those crabs die, and in some cases it can be substantial. And again, this is a measure that is, again, across the board. So its savings, if you will, has the potential to be great. The crab sanctuary season, this is a very straightforward measure. Currently, the sanctuary is closed from June 1 to September 15th. We are recommending closing it an additional 2 weeks on the front end, starting May 15. The reasoning behind this, very straightforward. Crabs actually start spawning around May 15. And so if they're in that sanctuary, they ought to be protected. It's as simple as that. Now, the advisory committee seemed to favor this, but put off a recommendation on it in favor of asking you to advertise an even longer closure of the sanctuary area, starting as early as April 15th. Staff is not prepared to recommend that to you today because it's unrelated to the fact of when crabs are spawning. It is more related to protecting crabs that are staging to spawn or that are migrating into the sanctuary. And there will be real value in that, and you'll see more on that at the end of the presentation. The next issue that was widely supported by the advisory committee and many others in the industry was to regulate the use of agents in the crab fishery, and the advisory committee went beyond the staff recommendation and recommended total elimination of the use of agents in 2009. We are not proposing that to you today because there may be other effort control mechanisms that we bring to you in the near future that will lessen the need to totally eliminate the use of agents. But here today, we are asking that you limit agents to the use of a single crabbing license. A person who is licensed to hard crab pot cannot, under our proposal, also serve as an agent for someone else, so that he has his gear and the gear of another person stacked on the same vessel or multiple people. One agent, one license. Further, that we require that all of the agents be registered with the agency and approved by the commissioner prior to their going to work. And only one agent per vessel. Can't fill the boat up with agents fishing lots of licenses. Again, the advisory committee supported going even beyond this to eliminate the whole use of the agents. Lastly, the dredge fishery. If you'll think back to the public comments that I showed you, it is clear to staff that the public sees the dredge fishery as a major problem. They know that there's a great amount of wastage in the fishery. They know that the product is probably one of the least valuable if you compare it to the prices that the watermen get throughout the year. And they know that the fishery is essentially in an economic tailspin. You know, at one time we had 375 boats in the fishery. Today we're down to about 65. As an immediate step, we are recommending that the dredge participation in the dredge fishery be capped, starting with the coming season, to only those individuals who can document or have documented prior to the control date you've already set harvest in the dredge fishery in the 05-06 season and in the 06-07 season. Currently, we estimate that to be about 55 individuals. Otherwise, the current cap in that fishery is 225. There are 225 licensees that could enter the fishery at any time, and we are proposing to eliminate those before the start of the next season. Now, in terms of additional things that need to be done, I hope we made it clear to the public and to you last month that the initial recommendations that you are voting on here today are short-term measures that, even if all of them are adopted, they will not solve the problem of overfishing and low abundance. Significant additional actions are needed, and working with the advisory committee and listening to public comment, we have come up with these additional five measures that we would request you approve for public comment at the April meeting. Let me just check one thing. Let me go back to this. On April 1st, or somewhere thereabouts, we will have in hand the results of the 07-08 scientific winter dredge survey. That survey will provide us with the next value on this graph. If that number falls below the red line, there will obviously be a need to take extreme measures. If it is above the line but below what is an interim target of 200 million crabs, then that's a little bit of good news, but there will still be need to take additional action. And if for some reason the value is above the 200 million mark, and I can tell you right now it will not be, then we probably wouldn't need to do anything else. I can't give you any preliminary estimate of where it will be until all of the data are in, but that's why we would prefer that the public hearing on these measures not take place until the April commission meeting. So we'll have that data in hand, and you'll know how severe you need to be with these. But in the meantime, here's what they are. A reduction in the number of peeler pots and crab pots that a licensee can set by up to 50%. Now, whether we end up at 50% or 30% or 10%, I can't tell you now, but we hopefully will be able to tell you a lot more once that winter dredge survey number is in. And that's why we recommend that you advertise this, the most severe, up to 50%. The advisory committee has, in fact, recommended that you consider up to 30% reduction in both peeler pots and hard crab pots. So there is already some support in industry for taking this type of a measure. The second bullet, closure of the sanctuary as early as April 15, that too was recommended for your consideration. It wasn't an outright vote in favor. It was a vote that the commission should add this to its list of additional items. And staff agrees, and that's why it's on there. A third issue gets at the low abundance of male crabs, and that is a proposal to increase the size of the coal rings and the tributaries to 2 3/8 inches, and also consider, and there's no size stated here, consider the placement of coal rings in peeler pots. We already require coal rings in crab traps, which are a peeler fishery, and we probably should extend that to peeler pots as well. Number four, staff believes the time has come to consider the elimination of the winter dredge fishery. The public appears to be strongly supportive of this action based on comments. It is a fishery that doesn't produce a high-value product. There are only about 60 people in the fishery, most of whom possess licenses to participate in the other crab fisheries. So they're not going to be put totally out of business. They will be able to reap the benefits of eliminating the crab fishery in the following year's hard crab pot fishery. Not all of those crabs will survive, but again, there were 7 million female crabs harvested in the 06-07 dredge fishery, that if that fishery is closed, a good portion of those could make it to the spawning season. As an option, if you're not interested in closing the entire fishery, we think you should at least consider significantly shortening the dredge season, cutting it off around January 15th. And it appears that most of the wastage in that fishery does occur after the middle of January. And that's the reasoning behind that date. Again, the degree that you adopt these in April would depend on that winter dredge survey value. The final measure is a sanctuary of size designed to protect female crabs. The state of Maryland is as involved in discussing crab management with their authorities and with their industry as we are and have been. And one of the measures that they are looking at is this size sanctuary of a 6.5-inch maximum size on female crabs that would reduce exploitation by as much as 12%. However, it makes little sense for Maryland to adopt that measure, knowing full well that in the fall, those crabs will migrate into Virginia waters on their way to the overwintering grounds where they would be fair game. And so we would ask that you consider that measure in April as well. Based on a newspaper article this morning, I think Maryland will be taking their actions sometime in mid-April. So by your April commission meeting, you will know what has been done on that measure to the north. And that is that's it, unless you have questions. Oh, wait a minute. Oops, I'm sorry. Oh. Just as a reminder, staff, you have already told staff to work on some much longer-term measures. An effort control system that can be responsive to annual changes in the stock, rather than sort of piecemealing management of the fishery with a variety of measures, come up with one, like limits on pots, that can be annually adjusted depending upon the status of the resource. Two, a crab pot tagging program, and three, elimination or control of latent effort. All of these are extremely important, and staff is already working on these, and we'll be discussing them further with our advisors in the not too distant future. The only other thing I have for you, because I know it's going to come up today, is predation. The document that I put in front of you is some work that VIMS did on this very issue back in 2004 and 2005. The last time we regulated crabs, it came up. And just to read very quickly from its conclusions, it does note that the crabs are the most important dietary components of striped bass feeding and grass beds. But the overall conclusions were, although striped bass eat millions of crabs and seagrass, their overall impact on the crabs available in these habitats is minor, between 1.7 and 4.4% of those available. Croaker have an even smaller impact and consume fewer than 0.5% of the crabs available. Thus, predation impact by these two fish predators views being minor overall during spring and fall after crabs settle. Crabs then quickly grow to a size that predators are unable to consume them in the hard shell condition, and at that point, harvesting takes over as the major influence. But suppose that's wrong. Suppose that striped bass eat crabs in even greater abundance than the study showed. The question then becomes, well, what is the solution to that problem? This is part of the control rule for striped bass, and the indicating the target fishing mortality rate is the dotted line, and the overfishing level or threshold at the solid line here. And as you can see, the most recent data show that striped bass along the entire coast, based on these models, and the dark blue line is the newest one, are right at the target. So the question is, would there be any possibility of success in convincing the Atlantic States Commission authorities to increase the harvest of striped bass here in Chesapeake Bay because they're eating all the crabs? And this graph suggests very strongly to me that the answer would be no, because increases in harvest would raise this blue line up toward the overfishing threshold. So are we willing to overfish one species to potentially raise the abundance of another? I mean, that's what we call ecosystem management. And the facts are at this point, I think most of the states to the north of us would not be so inclined. Let's see. The last graph just shows you how much, in fact, in the last 15 years, striped bass harvest has increased along the Atlantic coast. It seems to be going up every year. So I suppose if you're a blue crab, that's a good thing. And I will leave it at that.
Jack, could you do me a favor and please touch on the issue pertaining to our knowledge that this is a Bay-wide problem, not just a Virginia problem, not just a Maryland problem, and the fact that dialogue is ongoing between the states to come to a solution in this matter, please?
Well, Maryland is just as involved in trying to find solutions to this problem that we are. We have had a number of conversations, both the commissioner and I and the secretary have had a number of conversations with our counterparts at Maryland Department of Natural Resources. They are holding meetings with their industry members. They are preparing options, just as we have done, that include a total ban on the harvest of all female crabs in Maryland. I think about 30% of their harvest is female crabs, so it's a significant undertaking that they're going through. We will be, in fact, meeting with them face-to-face in the next few weeks to advise them as to what took place at this meeting and what your plans are for the April public hearing relative to the issues that I've shown you.
And during that same time frame, we'll be having a subcommittee meeting at the Potomac River Fisheries Commission to try to work out something that would involve consistency across the board as far as the fishery is concerned. Any questions of Jack? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions for Jack. Jack, do you mind putting up the options that you also recommended that we advertise for? I think you had that on the slide. Thank you. The one question there on the first option, you've asked us to advertise for a total reduction in gear of up to 50%. And just if I can take a step back, I mean, when we went through the review process, it was my understanding that what we would effectively do is attempt to do some modeling of the population and potential gear reductions and do that in the context of a effort control system.
Yes.
We already at our January meeting have tasked staff effectively with developing that effort control system, but that system might include crab pot tags, and that type of mechanism would be a focal point for controlling the fishery overall, but then it might be accompanied with some market-type mechanisms such as transfers, et cetera, to provide for economic flexibility within the fishery. And within that type of framework and system, we would be in a position to make the substantial or necessary cuts to get the resource that we need to get it to while preserving the economic viability of the fishery. So, and I guess this follows on the subcommittee's recommendation. As a subcommittee, we discussed the need for immediate effort reductions, and the recommendation was 10 to 30%. That was effectively offered as a substitute motion at the time as an alternative to some of the Peeler minimum size and Peeler sign definitions that were on the table. But I guess my point is, you know, if we were to go immediately to a 50% reduction in effort and we didn't have the framework that would allow for some economic flexibility, that would be a fairly tough option. But
it would be. And it is recommended solely to preserve the commission's right to take that onerous of a step if that number from the winter dredge survey comes back way below that red line, then clearly we may have to. There are others in industry who have said you need to take that kind of step for a couple of reasons. One, you're not going to have the crab pot tagging program system in place this year to enforce it, and there will be cheating on that, but if you cut it by 50%, you may end up in reality at a 30% cut. That was from industry. The real hard part about this measure is understanding how effort affects exploitation. There's a lot of evidence. All you have to do is look back in history to times when fishermen literally only set 50 crab pots or 100 crab pots and were catching more crabs then than they are now. So you can have significant reductions in the number of pots, and all you're really doing is, instead of each crab pot catching four or five crabs, now it's catching six or seven or eight or nine. You're just moving the crabs to fewer points of capture, but you're still capturing them. And so you have to have substantial. Now, what is substantial? Is substantial 30% or 50%? That's what we're working on.
And to follow up, Mr. Chairman, thank you. The issue of the 6.5-inch maximum size on females, that request has been made to us by Maryland.
Yes.
And I wonder if you would envision this as something that we could use in turn to work towards securing a migratory corridor from Maryland for that fall run of females.
It's possible. I'm not aware at this point if that is on the list, but it could certainly be discussed when we have face-to-face meetings.
Thank you.
Mr. Fox.
It's not on the list, but would you contemplate, in connection with the first bullet up there, perhaps reducing the number of recreational pots as well?
Sure. The based on, you know, some studies that were done a few years ago and what we hear from the recreational fishery, the The recreational harvest was about 3 to 5% of the commercial harvest. It's very small, but I should have mentioned this earlier. There is something to be said about fairness and equity when we regulate. All the users, all the gear types should play a role in this conservation effort. And that means recreational fishermen as well. I would say yes, put them on the list.
For that, it mentions per license. And
right now we allow, the General Assembly allows everybody to have 2 crab pots. We couldn't change that without legislation. But there is a recreational license, if you want to set more than 2, that allows you to set 5 crab pots. You could do away with that license, for instance, and put everybody back to 2. If you want that on the list, we will add it.
And that would require the legislative change. The other thing that was mentioned, we've discussed.
Not to reduce the 5 to 0.
No, not that one.
Yeah.
The other one. The other one that makes things a little bit difficult from an enforcement perspective is the code allows 2 crab pots per person in the house. And before you know it, Johnny and Susie and the 14 cousins are living at the house and you've got 20 pots hanging off the end of the dock. It would make it a lot easier if we do undertake legislation to allow X number of pots on a pier or, because it's not that many people that actually go out, from my observation, and actually set the crab pots out in the water and then fish them that way. Most of them are fishermen of convenience and hang them off the end of the pier. So if you look, at least work toward that, that might be of assistance. So it's a good point.
Well, do we have to have a motion to the commission to add something to this list, or?
You will have to have a motion to approve this list or any additions to it for public hearing in April when you're ready.
Well, I guess I'm ready to propose that we add recreational to the list in whatever form staff would recommend.
What you can do, sir, is you can make a motion to approve what's before you there before we get, because this is just an advertisement for public hearing, and amend it to the point where you want it. The motion that you would make that pertains to recreational for the 2 per person, of course, is legislative in nature and would be nothing but a signal, which is not, there's no problem with that whatsoever, mm-hmm. by signaling the commission's desire that the legislature look at it, and then as the next legislative session comes up, we can approach my boss, and as we always do with a package, and say, this came up, and we would work toward that. But I think your point's well made. I think Jack makes a good point as far as the equity issue is concerned. So the floor is yours.
I would move that we add recreational pots into this in the appropriate manner as determined by staff.
Okay.
And if some other member of the commission is a wordsmith, let them come up with the words.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just, in terms of the sequence of things here, I was under the impression we might take public comment before we actually.
We can do either one.
If that's okay with the chair.
It is okay, Mr. Kiker.
I have one more question for Mr. Travelstead, and that's a with reference to the dredging fishery. You mentioned 50 to 75% wastage. Now, is that wastage that's involved in the processing of reducing that 20 barrels down into 7 bushels, or is that wastage that's also include what never made it into the dredge and cut it in the bottom?
Right. It's more the latter than the former.
Do you have any estimation of how much is left after a dredge passes through?
No. But industry members can describe that, I think, much better than I. But, I mean, and all we hear are anecdotal reports that when you get a dredge on hard bottom, you start cutting up crabs, and they come up in pieces. Some of it comes up in pieces. Some of it's left on the bottom in pieces.
Right.
If we have to take steps, it seems to me we take steps to eliminate wastage first and then move on from there.
Further questions? Thank you, Jack.
So we'll just hold my motion.
Yes, sir. You got it on file.
Good.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a public hearing. There are a number of people here today. Each one of you will be afforded an opportunity to be heard. The only thing that I ask is that if someone has said something ahead of you that you agree with, as my former mentor and former commissioner used to say, just say that you support what the other person said, because in all actuality, we did hear it the first time, and you could be using the time to make another idea. That's the only thing that I ask, and that this hearing remain as civil as it has today, and I really appreciate that. Who is first that would like to speak? Yes, sir. Come forward, Mr. Pruitt. Good afternoon, sir.
First thing I'd like to ask for these all these regulations. Didn't I read it?
Did you say your complete name?
He didn't. Charles Pruitt from Tangier. Okay. I said, these regulations, you know, we read a letter not too long ago. They come from here admitting that the last 10 years your regulations didn't work. But now all of a sudden you're turning around and throwing all these extra ones on us. We're not going to survive. The crabbers is the one. Nobody else is affected in here but the crabber. We're gone. If you issue all these regulations, you might as well throw us out. We're done. We're a done deal. We cannot handle no more regulations. We've been regulated to death, and that's the truth. And the sanctuary, I can pick every one of your regulations right apart. I can prove. First thing I want to ask, if there's anybody in here who can prove that over-harvesting is the cause of the crab decline, let him speak up. I want to talk to him. He's the one I want to talk to the most, the one to come up with the idea about these regulations. People just don't realize what's going to happen to the watermen. You're talking about crab dredging. 35 to 40 boats is all's work this year. 35 to 40 boats. Now, they ain't heard of that. Crab potting's the same way. 51 of my friends that were watermen 10 years ago is going off the fishery. It's totally been cut in half. You wonder what a decline of crabs is? That's part of your reason right there. Everybody's getting off the water. It ain't going to work. If you put these regulations on us, and you might as well say the bay's finished for commercial fishing, for crabbing. And anybody's got any questions at all, I think I can answer each regulation. You're talking about your season limits, talking about taking, 15 days in November? Or 15 in March? Whatever. Let me tell you, every waterman in here can vouch for this. I take at least a month and a half off out of my season every year, and every waterman does, for weather, for breakdowns, for slow catch, and a variety of things. Railways. I mean, we do take that time off. We're not fishing every day. Nobody in here is fishing every day. That's what gets me. It's all shit on us, the crabber. And we just can't handle no more. I mean, you know, you're putting us out of business if you pass these laws. Just remember that. They just don't affect nobody but us. See, we're always the ones that we're low on the totem pole, in other words, pretty much. But with the fuel prices, we have to pay so much for fuel oil now. We're barely getting by now. Barely making. That's the reason everybody's leaving the industry. They just can't afford to do it no more. And if this comes about, these laws and stuff, I don't know. You might not care, really. I don't know. But I care.
I can assure
you. I've done this all my life. This is all we know. Pretty much everybody in here, it's all we know. Water. That's all. I've done it my whole life, ever since I graduated high school. And there's no need of throwing all these extra regulations out that till you can prove that it's going to do some good. You know, you admitted 10 years ago it didn't do no good the last 10 years, but you turn around and throw them on us anyway. Now I got another question. No scientists. Where's all the scientists at? That's what I'm after. They're stone crabs. When I crab dredged in 1970 to 1975, you could catch a dreadful of them everywhere. Everybody can vouch for me that does it. Stone starfish. Spider crabs. Where's all them crabs going? Nobody ain't been catching them. What happened to them?
I don't know.
Now maybe it's something else taking care of these crabs besides overfishing. That's my argument. Huh? Yeah, that's possible too. But what I'm saying is, if anything else happens to us, and I don't want to be, I don't want to come up here to be a smart aleck or whatever. I just want you all to know what's going to happen to us, because we're hanging by a thread. is what we're hanging by.
Mr. Pruitt, I can assure you that the commission gets no pleasure in enacting, and let me finish, in enacting any type of regulation that makes anything more difficult on any citizen of the Commonwealth of Virginia. I also know, and I spoke when I first took the job, that decisions that are made here at the commission should be made on sound science. The numbers don't lie. Things are bad.
Right.
They're really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if something is not done, I fear that regardless of what we do today, you won't have any crabs to deal with later on. That's my concern.
Uh-huh.
And if we as a commission do not take some type of action to stave off the numbers that you see on the graph, that we've not done our job, because you would be just as right to come back here in 5 years if there's a collapse and we haven't done anything and ask us, why didn't you do something? It was your job, Commissioner Bowman, to save this resource, to protect this resource, to manage the resource. And where you said that the regulations haven't worked in the last 10 years, I tend to agree with Mr. Travelstead. I fear we would be in a worse predicament today if the regulations hadn't been put in place. This is not an easy thing to do, and looking out across this crowd and the friendly face or the familiar faces I see, I get no pleasure sitting up here and making regulations that place difficulty on friends and hardworking watermen.
Yeah, but my response to that is, and tell you all, start listening to watermen more. We've got more. We know more about anything about those crabs than any scientist in here. And I can prove it. If you'll just get up and face me. But they don't do it.
Okay.
They just don't do it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Who's next? Charles? Mr. Williams?
Charles Williams, Reedville.
Good afternoon, Mr. Williams.
Good afternoon. I think we need to listen to Mr. Pruitt and folks like him. I think they bear a lot of truth. I come from a family of watermen, my grandfather, my father, myself, got a son, two sons that are watermen, all made a living off the water. I've got a grandson. Don't know what the future holds for him. When it comes to a shortage, I've noticed, of any resource, the first cry that usually goes out is overfishing, overharvesting. And that's something that I know the commission, the staff has done a good job. The reports that the scientists have done, they've put the numbers up, and like you say, you can't lie about the numbers. I think that's been a good job. But I don't think that's all of our answer to the problem. I think that water quality, habitat degradation, what's going to happen, I'm fearful of, is in maybe a couple of years we'll be right back here with worse numbers, and we're going to continue to cut. Well, it's evident to me that all these cuts and restrictions haven't solved the problem. Like you say, they may have helped, but they haven't solved our problem. I don't hear what else we're doing to counter this decline in the resource. I'd like to hear something of that. The ASMFC, not a friend to Virginia. They have not been helpful. What we're doing is harboring a nursery area for these northern states, and I don't think that's right. Now, I know we've challenged that and walked away with our tail between our legs, but at some point we need to tell it like it is and be able to manage the Virginia waters in our interest. I was taking a couple notes here. The rockfish, there seems to be a strong argument and a difference of opinion between whether they're hurting the resource or not. It seems to me the old hydraulic principle, it's if you artificially hold up one stock, something else is liable to go down. I question whether we're doing right with holding these rockfish up as high as we've got them now. The other states, like Jack said, will disagree. I'm not sure I understand, and maybe at some point someone will talk more about the latent effort of that we want to do away with. That may be me. I've had a waterman's card for years, ever since they came out with them, trying to keep it going. If you don't keep it up, and I've got money invested in it, now it looks like down the road we're going to do away with them. If I've got a card paying on it and not catching crabs, I don't know what I'm doing to hurt the resource that I may be able to give to my son or a grandson later on by keeping it up. Let's see. I would just like to say that consideration be given to other things other than just to restrict the watermen. Now, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning and read the morning paper and drink my coffee, and I'm going to read something that is going to have an inference that the working watermen, the commercial fishermen of the bay, are doing something wrong. It won't say it necessarily in those words, but that's going to be the sentiment that goes out, that the reason we've got problems in the bay is because of the working watermen. I'm here to tell you they're out there just trying to make a living, and it's hard, and it looks like we're heading down the road to put some of them out of business. I don't know what the answer is, but I challenge the commission to do more than just look for restricting the watermen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Jenkins, then the gentleman directly behind Mr. Jenkins. Can't see. All I could see was your hand. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Commission, members of the board. Doug Jenkins, representing Queen River Waterman Association. You smile, and I think you got me already. I had passed out some previous information to Jack, and I'm sure you have them in your folder. I hope you read those. And then there was two additional letters, one from Captain Fawn Seafood and one from O'Bear Seafood.
I'm right here.
And I hope you've had time to read those, because it's very important information there, and people in the industry are concerned about the fishery as well as I. I have so many papers here and so many documents. I don't know where to start, but I got to start somewhere. So, in your folder also, you have a couple pages there. This is the result of the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, the fish kills up and down the bay, and particularly Potomac River, and this is the dead zone. And I want to point out to you that this dead zone here in the middle of the bay, mine is brighter than y'all's are. It looks like a blank. Y'all's is in black and white. But this sort of prints out the dead zone in the bay. 75% of your crab dredging surveys is in the dead zone, so I don't think you're going to find too many crabs bedding down in the dead zone. That's just a point I want to bring out to you. I'm going to get to it more later on in my presentation. You also, I gave you a chart. It's in your package of the croaker catches. And it's starting in 1994, and I just carried them to 2000, but I didn't need to put too many more pages in that. And the reason I put that in there was because out of your blue crab management plan, you had a graph and chart of the youth crabs and adults. And if you notice back in 1996 and 97, there was a up in your youth of the year crabs in your dredge survey. So that would tell me that if that happened in 96 and 97, well, 97 and 98, that ought to be a spike in your large crabs. But it never resulted, never got there. And the reason for it is that your croaker catches went from 6.5 million to 11 million. That's one of the things that happened. Predators. They ate the little crabs. Now, I got more testimony to document that. This report, I sort of got off foot here, but the report that y'all passed out was the best available scientific data suggested that some degree of management reform may be necessary to restore the blue crab stock and fishery to a healthy level. I thought I had that highlighted. And also it says, VIMS indicate there is evidence of high mortality rates of juvenile crabs tied to the loss of SAV, and this loss has a direct impact on recruitment of age 1 plus. The extent of predation on blue crabs by predators such as striped bass, red drum, Atlantic croaker is unknown. That's what it said in the report. And I have over here a report from VIMS, and like the gentleman said, I don't see nobody here today from VIMS, poor soul. I don't know what happened to him, but anyway.
They're here, Doug.
Are they? Okay. Well, I hope they're listening. Told you I had too many papers up here. I'm getting them all mixed up now. That's on the croaker. I want y'all to notice that because the graphs that they showed y'all to make your decision, they didn't show the most important scientific thing in that graph, and that was the increase in one predator. And I'm going to touch on three predators today. For instance, the striped bass that they said that they really didn't know how many they consumed, but they did do a test on them where they found out in the grass beds and the ones out grass beds they ate great many, but they didn't feel like that was a significant impact. Well, the quota for the bay now is 10 million pounds of rock. And they pretty much, I'm talking about the bay, I'm talking about Maryland, I'm talking about River and Virginia. And they pretty well reach that quota each year. That's how many they catch. Now, that's not how many is out there. If you say a good estimate, you say it's 10 times that many, it's probably more. So we're talking about 100 million pounds of rock in the bay, and I'm sure it's more than that when they come in here and go out. Say if they only ate 2 pounds of crabs a year. I mean, there was 140 counted of small crabs in 1 2.5-pound rock fish, and 140 small crabs is 70 pounds of weight of harvest crabs. I'm trying to give you a little math here now. And that goes up into millions, and Jack was talking earlier about if we did this savings, it would cut back 2 or 3 million crabs. Well, now I'm talking about hundreds of millions up here now with just one predator. If you add that croaker to it, we harvest 11 million pounds of those now since the crab population is going down. So if we're harvesting 11 million of those, we're certainly not harvesting every one every year because it wouldn't be none, wouldn't there be 11 million to harvest next year. So you take that 11 million and multiply that timber, you've got 100 million crabs, and say they eat 2 or 3 pounds of crabs a year. Well, guys, we up there in 200 or 300 more million, and Jack's talking about 2 or 3 million. And I haven't gotten back to the worst predator of all, and that's the blue catfish. Refer back to your literature or your papers I gave you. This was a report, and VIMS has it. The worst predator ever was introduced in the bay is the blue catfish. A couple guys got their masters on it, doing the thesis on this, and I talked to one of them. He says it's unbelievable the crabs that one catfish can eat. They found whole, legal-sized hard crabs and it stumped them. Well, it also tells you in here that they tolerate salinities up to 12 parts. Most of your juvenile crabs live and survive in around 8 to 10 parts salinity in the heads of the creeks and the small rivers. And this is from in his report, and I didn't do this, the student done this, didn't understand. The crab is the worst predator of all these that's listed. The Atlantic crocus, striped bass, grover, drum, black grub, all of them. The blue catfish is the worst. You also had this folder, this little printout in your thing. Did any of you look at that? That's some very important information there now. I put that in there for a purpose. This is the catches my son and I peeler pots last year. You see that we had 68 and a quarter bushels of peelers in the summer. I got that from mandatory reporting, if I can get it over here. I copied that right off these sheets here, and they got them on record here at VMRC. I'm not trying to put anything over y'all, though. I'm telling you like it is. During that 68 and a quarter bushels, we sold 1,336 pounds of crocus. We were caught in them peeler pots. We sold 1,466 pounds of catfish, and we couldn't even sell them. Just a very few days, they didn't want to buy them because no market at that point. During that time, we caught five times as many fish in our peeler pots as we did peelers. And, you know, y'all may not understand it, but I know why they went in there. Because I seen them spitting pieces of crabs out as we bought them in the cold box. I had some data that I asked from down here, and I want to say VMRC has been very cooperative in providing me data on the catfish. And since it isn't in the market on that, it doesn't pay the water to catch them. We throw them back overboard. My son and I, we cut up those three bushels a day, put them in a crab pot. We want to get rid of every one of them can. I think we're doing justice by that. But just in the last 3 years alone, the catfish harvest has doubled. Trying to find market anywhere we can. We'll give them away if you take them. If you come down to the boat, they're hard to lug because they stick all in you and they're heavy as lead. But anyway, that's your catfish. That's the three predators that I'm going to address. And we still had a drink of water. I'm getting tired. My mouth's getting dry now. Cold. But I'll get through here, Colonel Bowman, if you'll bear with me. And you have so far.
I'm getting you a drink of water.
You're a good man. Told everybody you was a good man. You might not think I'm so good after this, but I'm going to tell it anyhow.
Been so long, Doug, you wouldn't change it, believe me.
Those who serve on the recent Blue Crab Management Plan for VMRC certainly were well-qualified personnel. Six of those had PhDs, and I'm sure they were experts in the lab as well as in the field. But whoever was responsible for scientific information regarding the decline in the blue crab population must have fell asleep at the wheel or stayed home. You would think something as important as the blue crab is to the economy and the citizens of our Commonwealth that VIMS and VMRC could provide better information to those who were interested in protecting the blue crab population. The main theme throughout the report was control effort by requiring marking pots with tags. It's on 8 pages in a number of paragraphs. Pot buoys are marked now, and with an 8-hour work day effort is already restricted. Mandatory reporting shows there is less effort now than there ever was. Pilopide effort has dropped off 50% in the last 3 or 4 years. It is only 4% of the total harvest. Yet, they propose to cut it another 3%.
I'll get you water.
Thank you, sir. First time I ever had a Marine officer give me a drink of water.
It's called a Kodak moment.
Good job, I can tell you that. Yeah. Is it all right if I hold on to it a while?
How much longer are you going to be talking?
Not as long as it takes, sir. I'm glad you opened that door so I can see Ron Lippis over there, that crab expert. Now, where was I? I think I was on that peel of crab. 4% of the total harvest. Yet the purpose to cut it another, they propose to cut it another 3%, which would leave it only 1% of the total harvest. Now, don't you think those people who enjoy saw crabs in the restaurants that sell them should have more than 1% of the crab harvest? I do. I don't have no problem with that 3.5-inch peeler. But when you cut that white line peeler out, you know, peeler run, in case y'all don't know it, don't last over about 7-8 days. And if a Nor'easter come, you got 2 days. And if you cut the white line peeler out, you don't have much of anything left. So, you know, we got thousands of dollars invested in fiberglass floats, pumps, and tanks, and pots, and gear, and you're going to give us 1% of the total harvest? I can't handle that. This was supposed to be a scientific report, and the most important science of all was hardly mentioned. Three main predators in the bay, rockfish, croaker, and blue catfish, since the early 90s, have increased tenfold. During this time, their numbers have increased, and the crab population is struggling to hold its own. Them claim they don't know the impact of predators on the crabs. Never even mentioned the worst predator of all, the blue catfish, that was introduced to the Bay Rivers in the mid-80s. They were, I think it was about 85 when they was introduced, and they have really grown in numbers. We catch 5 times as many predators in our pots as we do peelers. Why do they go in there? And I've told you all that. If you read the report on the blue catfish, you can see it lives in salty water, and crab is its favorite diet. There are 7 major river systems now that has been invaded by these blue catfish, and they range up to 95 pounds apiece. It is unreal the amount of valuable fish and crabs they are consuming. And in that report also, it told you what happened to the shad and the blueback heron, what the catfish are doing. And this is not the first instance that I have been down here, as well as others, telling this commission about the damage the blue catfish is doing. You don't see them in the lower part of the bay, but you see them in the rivers and up at the headwaters in salinity, running around 5-8 part. These three predators, the damage they are doing, I would say off the top of my head, is 10 times as much damage as the crabs are doing. We need to do something with the predators, and I'm not so much worried about people up north. If we had, and we do have evidence to prove our case, if you got behind the Secretary of Natural Resources and the governor of this Commonwealth, if you do think we should survive our crab fishery and our other fisheries for the rock fish, then historically that doesn't come under the Murfreesboro Act of Congress, where historically your fisheries should be protected, and that should have an impact on it. And I would hope you would pursue that. Just last year, VMRC recommended spending thousands of dollars on the harvesting and processing of cow nose raised in the bay because of the damage to the arsebeers that is caused by them. Predators. Important to the oyster fishery, but don't seem like it cuts much weight with the crab. So my question is, why don't they recognize the damage that these three predators are having on the blue crab population? Why wasn't it the main theme in the blue crab management plan? There certainly was enough scientists in there. We need a multi-species fishery management plan that is based on good science, not whether the crabs are catching something or not, but on good science. Some science that I've provided you with today. A tagging program will not stop the predators from eating our crabs. Science is knowledge collected through study, data, observation, and practice. I have 59 years of studying crabs and their habits. I know what to eat, and I know who eats them. I know where the small ones go to shed and grow out, and I know where the big ones go after their final molting. I don't have a PhD, and I certainly respect those that do have one. But there are very few people in this state that has as many working hours in the water observing crabs and fish as I have. And I learn something almost every season. Ida Hall, who serves on the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, told some of your other board members a couple of weeks ago how many small crab sheds she observes around the shoreline during the last few years in the early part of the spring. But another season increase in the larger crabs later on in the summer. The same observation that the rest of the watermen observe each year now, we've been observing it for the last 10 years. Some years it's bigger than others, but it's out there. And I keep saying, well, we're going to have a nice run of crabs later on in the fall, but it never happens. If you're going to put restrictions on anything, put it on sponge crabs. And put a bushel catch. But if you don't look seriously at the predation that's happening in this bay and have a multi-species management plan, then like Mr. Park said earlier, be back here 5 years again and blaming the things on the watermen. We got blamed for overfishing the rock. They cut us out of that. We got blamed for overfishing the oysters. They've put most of that in sanctuaries. And watermen now, you don't have that resource. And now you're going to take away the crab. So I don't know what kind of plans you got for us. But, you know, I guess we just will hang it up. Thank you. Thank you for the water, too.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowman. I just wanted to respond to Doug, if I could. This is Ron Lipsius from VIMS. And first of all, I want to say those were, in my view, wise words, what he's saying about the predation. What VIMS knows is only about seagrass fed. We know that from Jack Van Marfan's work that percentage that he was talking about is only for the fall for striped bass and seagrass, and for croaker in the spring in seagrass. We know that the croaker and striped bass and blue catfish are throughout all the rest of the tributaries, and that is an unknown right now. And I, from some of the observations we've made, we see some pretty serious predation on very young juveniles. So what I can say is that in our, as our part of the effort, we're certainly going to move forward to look at predation outside of the seagrass beds and examine that further.
We'll look forward to hearing your response, because the information that you will be in a position to provide us may be the necessary information to go forward and ask for increases in allotment and things like that, depending upon how it comes out. Thank you, sir. Mr. Smith.
I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Don't many people say that, too.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Ken Smith, Virginia Watermen's Association. I sent something to Jack. Did you all get copies of that? I'll try to make this real brief. Mr. Fox brought up the part about the recreational crabbing, and you mentioned his 14 cousins out there. Where I come from, it's nothing to see 8-10 crab pots off a pier. And even though you're allowed to, just one person goes out and crab them, but he justifies, you know, the 14 cousins.
He's acting as their agents.
That's exactly right. It's agency in a different aspect. The bad part about that, one of the bad parts about that is that these crabs go from the crab pot to the cooking pot. I've only seen one person cull them in my life, and that was almost comical to watch him do that. Him and his wife go down and fish here one crab pot and save that 5-inch crab every day till he got four. But like I say, that's the only time I've ever seen that done. The other part about that, that's something that's going to have to be enforced, this thing about the small crabs coming out of these crab pots. And I know that's hard probably for you all to do, but I know that it can be done. And if it is done, the word gets out real quick that you're going to get a ticket. And let a few people get a ticket, it'll send out a message to the public about just what a dire situation we're in with this crab. Doug got ready to touch on sponge crabs. You reported the Blue Crab Regulatory Review Committee, the statement of the problem. I'm just going to read a few excerpts from this. To investigate the potential of existing regulations to reverse current resource conditions of low overall abundance and low spawning potential. A little bit further down, and it says, objectives of Virginia regulations for the blue crab resource and its fisheries have been to promote increased abundance of exploitable crabs and a spawning stock that sustains optimum yield. 40 times spawning was mentioned in that report, and yet nothing was said about the sponge crab or the cushion crab. You know, rockfish are approaching record levels, the blue crabs at record low levels. It just looks to me that it would only be logical to put more of an emphasis on protecting this species. In 206, January of 206, the Crab Advisory Committee, Mr. Travis Dead and Dr. Lipscomb, stated that the dark sponge crab was not working, that there was seemed to be a lot of death from these crabs putting them back overboard. Seems to me like the only option on something like that is just to make it unlawful to catch them or to sell them, let me put it that way. There's no market, nobody will catch them. Or they might catch them, but they're going to target a different species and working on that. Now, I know that people are going to look around and say that's an economic hardship by doing that. But the thing is that there are also studies about the economic hardship of not catching sponge crabs. And the economic hardship does not go out to the waterman. It goes out to the processing industry in that sector where it goes from. And it's not just the processor that makes money, but it's the processors that make money and the money that trickles down through the economy because of that. But, gentlemen, you're a marine commission and not an economic commission. And the industry needs to be saved. The third thing that I'd like to bring up is the environmental conditions. And I think this was a big part of the report that was in there. It hadn't been addressed. On page 8 of the report, it stated, the success of management efforts can be complicated by variability of environmental conditions. And these are what they named. Ongoing losses in submerged aquatic vegetation. Reduction in oyster reefs. Predation on blue crabs by predators. And cannibalism. I knew Doug was going to hit on the predators. So I'm not going to go into that very much, but Dr. Lipschitz, is that how you pronounce it?
Lipschitz,
just a minute ago said that the study was done on just grass beds. That might be where the primary part of the study's been, but in the you got the crab advisory and you got the crab regulatory committees, but in the advisory committee that was up here Tuesday a couple of weeks ago, there was a paper in there that said the average size of the crab taken off of grass beds was a little under an inch, and the average size of crabs taken off bare bottoms was less than a half an inch. So that tells me that right off the bat that twice as many crabs are being eaten just because of the size bed. The reduction in oyster reefs. I'm not going to go into that one either, although I think I can tell you how to get that back in 5 years. Cannibalism. I won't go into that, but I think that's also can be related to the ongoing losses of aquatic seagrass. This is a 10-page report. It's a preliminary study done by on blue crabs by three fish predators. And it just says in this, I'll just read a couple of excerpts. This report serves as a preliminary assessment of potential feeding impacts on blue crab preying inhabiting a seagrass bed. A little further, it says nursery habitat functions invoke, among other attributes, added protection for predation, the resident prey populations, and an increase in primary production allowing high rates of secondary production. And growth of resident organisms. Such relationships have conclusively been demonstrated for juvenile blue crabs, which often attain densities in seagrass beds that exceed those of adjacent unvegetated areas by a factor of 10. The fact that these attributes of seagrass habitats appear to have such universal value that the National Marine Fisheries Service has recently emphasized seagrass beds as essential fish management. Magnuson Stevens Act, 1996. This is one article, study on seagrass beds. This is another study. This is a 22-page study. It cost $99,056 for this study. Its introduction starts off by saying, when the Magnuson Stevens Fishery Management Conservation Act was authorized in 1969, it recognized the importance of essential fish habitat and the ecosystem-based approaches to fishery management. Although these approaches were written in law, formal ecosystem-based fishery management plans have not been put into practice. Seagrass beds, further down, says seagrass beds have been identified as a critical nursery habitat for many important fish and other species. I've got one more study that's been done, or report. This is a 59-page, or 39-page study. This one doesn't really get into the advantages of having seagrass or how much seagrass has been lost. Like the first report, it was just a preliminary report, and it didn't cost $99,000. But it's a report that I got, and this is 39 pages of nothing but a list of published papers and reports that have been done by VIMS on seagrass. This is the thing that's, that watermen can't understand. We're production-oriented people. Computers and PowerPoint presentations aren't our tools. we don't catch any crabs, we don't come back to the dock and go get a grant and have a study. We go, we pick your pots up and we move them. Article 11, Section 1 of our state constitution says, to the end that the people have clean air, pure water, and the use and enjoyment for recreation of adequate public funds, waters, and other natural resources, it shall be the policy of the Commonwealth to conserve, develop, and utilize its natural resources, its public lands, and its historical sites and buildings. Further, it should be the Commonwealth's policy to protect its atmosphere, lands, and waters from pollution, impairment, or destruction for the benefit, enjoyment, and general welfare of the people of the Commonwealth. Gentlemen, our waters are polluted, our oyster reefs are impaired, and our aquatic vegetation is almost destroyed. I feel as though it's the job of this commission to address these issues of the environment. If they're not done, a few more years, another 5% of seagrass can be lost, 10% of seagrass can be lost. That crab that was looking for a place to hide in that grass this year is going to crawl into a pond. By not having that oyster reef to hide in and get food or seagrass bed to hide in, he's going to go right to a crab pot looking for something to eat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Who's next? Mr. Taylor. Good afternoon, sir.
Dale Taylor, president of Water, Virginia Waterman Association. Y'all excuse me if I get caught. Today I'd like for the commission and to recognize the watermans that we have here today. These are crabbers and watermans from all over the state of Virginia, practically. And I'd like for y'all to honor them here today for being here and trying to protect what the interest they have in the water. I'm pleased that they're here, and they are very much interested in what's going to happen here today in the future. It's to sit around and listen at the watermen's talk in these meetings, and they are concerned what's going to happen as well as you all are. But they are concerned about the regulations, too. They are concerned that the regulations might put more crabbers out of business than is already out. There's a lot of crabbers out of business, gone and worked somewhere else. And we are just taking the crab business out of Virginia and letting the crab meat come in from outside, from other countries. And a lot of that's going on. If you keep doing that, then a lot of our crab meat and stuff is going to be coming into Virginia, and the Virginia people are not going to be able to eat or not eating the Virginia seafood. And I think that's what's going to hurt Virginia the most, is the people out there who is eating the Virginia seafood and being told sometimes that the meat is coming from Virginia, not always. And I think that is hurting Virginia. And I think it's getting the people in Virginia a little bit upset, because they know that our seafood in Virginia is being cut and cut and cut. Until they're afraid, they're not going to be able to get this fine Virginia seafood at the restaurants and bring it home and eat. They're worried about that. And I think that these watermen deserve, all of you got up here today and you've listened. The three, this catfish, the croaker, and the rockfish. And I listened to them, and I've listened to you all today here and listened at other meetings. If this is concerned, these three species that is eating our crabs and destroying our way of living, then don't you think that we ought to write to our congressmen and our senators and our delegates and our governor and ask them that make a study on these three species, which hasn't been done. Ask them and whoever who does this to
to get this grant this money so they can make a study to bring back to you all so you can make your decisions if it's right or wrong. And I believe that every waterman in this place today, that they want to be told and talked to and explain stuff to them because they don't know about these numbers and all of this stuff. And I don't, certainly. But commission members, explain it to those people about the research that you all have done and how you do it, because I don't think we understand it. And certainly from hearing you all here today, I don't think that it's fair to the watermen that to stand here with all these things have been Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Williams and Mr. Pruitt and as all said, I go along with all of that. But I do believe that you, the people, can figure this out and make a study on those three rockfish and the croaker and the catfish. Last night on TV, I sat at home and listened, that where there were so many thousands, they didn't even know how many thousands, and I think, I forget what channel it was on, that the shad fish that had been eaten by the thousands, they said by thousands, are destroyed by fish, I guess, eating them up, another species. And that's what's happening to the shad population. But gentlemen, I wish you all would study this and ask for the money to, from the government, state, wherever you can get it, to make a study on these three animals that is trying to kill the crab business and eating the crab business up. And I think all of you sitting there want to know that too. You want to know just what these fish are doing to the crab business. And I think everybody would. So I'm asking y'all to please contact people who are responsible for getting this money to make these studies. And even the watermen could call their representatives and ask them to help out. And I thank you.
Thank you, Dale. Have a good day. Who's next? Mr. Nixon?
Peter Nixon from Norfolk, Virginia. I'm speaking to you today as a crabber and a 20-year member of the Blue Crab Subcommittee. A number of years ago, Virginia did an unintended experiment. They closed the James River for keephone poisoning, and it stayed closed for almost a decade. And during that period of time, you had a sanctuary created. We were allowed to go back in and crab in that area again in the early 80s, late 70s. And what we discovered up there was an abundance of just about every type of marine species there was. Shortly after that, a number of people from all over the state and the crabbers that lived on the James River and its tributaries increased their crabbing activity, and word got out that we were doing well. And consequently, early in the year, because the water warms at the lower end of the bay earlier, we had crabbers from all over the bay come down to Hard Crab Pot and then Peeler Crab Pot. And incrementally over the last 20 or 25 years, the area has been worked down to where it's just a shadow of its former self. I think during that time, when the river was closed, it actually acted as a feeder system for the whole bay, just like it used to for oysters. The whole oyster industry came crabbing into James in the river time, and seed oysters from the James were carried all over the state. I think one reason for this is it's the closest river in the state to the highest salinity area. This probably holds true for crabs more than oysters. The female crabs that come out of the James River have the shortest amount of distance to travel to get to their area where they rub off their sponges and the larvae then go out into the bay and out into the ocean. Since this area has been heavily worked for the last number of years, this potential for spawning has exponentially dropped. Personally, I believe that's the main reason we are where we are today with these problems. As most of you know, I've been a vociferous proponent over the last 15 years of some of the things that have been proposed today. I've also been an opponent recently of some of the things that were presented last month. One of them is the issue as far as shortening the season in the beginning and the end. Last year, the CRAB committee and the commission decided it was prudent to go ahead and open the season 2 weeks early every year to keep from having a market collapse with a rush of crabbers and the market anticipating a April opening. We determined that the crabs that you would catch in April would be the same ones you'd catch in March. It's not like there's any extra crabs that are going to be produced and not harvested. You'd just be delaying the harvest for a couple weeks. And it's a time of the year when the value on the product is pretty high. The same thing holds true in the fall. I don't think you'll get much effect from closing those 2 weeks in the beginning at the end. There are other better measures that are proposed that need to be looked at rather than this shortening of the season. One of the most important things you have before you today is this issue of agency and use of agents. And the proposal that was put forth was a good start, but if you pass it as it's proposed, there's going to be a huge loophole in it, and that's going to allow immediate license transfers from owners to crew members, and you're really not going to be able to do anything effective about the agent if you let these license transfers go on indiscriminately. In the short term, I think if you're going to look at agency and try to figure out how to manage it, you need to put a temporary moratorium on license transfers. In the long term, I think the license transfers need to be at interims of no less than 3 years. In other words, if I purchase a license and I intend to go crabbing, I couldn't transfer that license to somebody else other than an immediate family member because of death or whatever, for a period no shorter than 3 years. Those are the two things that I think are the most important before you today. On the long-term measures that Jack presented that we discussed in the CRAB committee meeting that go beyond today, I think one of the major things you need to look at is the idea of larger cull rings in the tributaries. I don't know that they're very effective in the bay at all. I spoke with Jack about this, and he's been under the impression for years that the cull ring was mainly to let female crabs go. Those of us that were using them before it became a regulation used them in order to let the smaller male crabs go, mainly for two reasons. At that time, when we had an abundance of crabs in the James River system, it made our culling procedure easier, and we caught more bigger crabs because the smaller crabs weren't in the pot to create competition in the pot, and the bigger crabs were more apt to go in there. But one other benefit we saw was throughout the season, as these crabs shed, we would continue to catch the larger crabs later on in the season instead of harvesting them all early and just some of them being wasted and sold as low-value product. That's another big problem we have in the state. We have some crabs left, but the quality of what we have is so pitiful. You go into processors, and the pickers in there complain about the small little females. They can't make any money picking by the piece, picking little teeny crabs. There's no good retail market for them. crab buyers at the crab houses in Maryland, the D.C., and the Baltimore area pay more for air freight for crabs coming out of Louisiana than the picking houses pay for crabs here in Virginia. We're closer to Maryland than Louisiana is. We need to get to a point where we have a product. Again, we used to have that product that can compete with that southern crab. They don't need to be all 7.5 or 8 and a half inches, but we at least need to get back to where we have an appreciable number in order to get market value for what we're catching up of what truly is a number one Jimmy crab, which is a crab that's 6 inches or over. The amount of those that we see now compared to what we used to see is just, it's terrible. instead of catching 25 or 30 bushels out of probably 30 bushel catch or however you want to break it down, you're only seeing an incremental portion of that, you know, 2 bushels, 3 bushels out of 15 bushels that you might be able to borderline grade as number ones. And that's where the value in this product is. One fellow mentioned that we have a problem, I guess it was Dale Taylor, about good Virginia product. Well, the pick and house industry in this state is down to just about almost nothing. The last pick and house on the Eastern Shore closed up last year. There's only a handful in Hampton, a couple up the bay, and nature abhors a vacuum, so that foreign meat has filled that void. The best chance we have for getting this industry back on its feet, dollar and cents-wise, is to have a good sustainable resource and a good supply of decent quality crabs. Even Johnny Graham in Hampton, the last couple of winters, he's gotten most of his crabs that he's picked from Georgia and South Carolina. And he called me in there last winter and said, come in there and look at these crabs. He said, these are great, nice, wonderful, great big crabs. In Georgia, they have 2 3/8 cull log. In Louisiana, I talked to one of the crab biologists down there, Vince Guillory. They have a 2 5/16 escape ring law down there. He pushed for a 2 3/8, but that was the best he could do. But their growing season is a little bit longer in Louisiana. The waters are warmer. They can crab a couple more months in the fall and a couple more months in the spring. And their crabs will shed 1 or 2 more times a year on average, their male crabs. But even their females, they have what they call down there number one females. I went down to help a friend of mine after Katrina, stayed at a relative's house, and they made fun of me about what kind of crabs we have in Virginia compared to what they have down there. We need to get Virginia's quality back along with the abundance of the resource. And if you don't take reasonable measures to do that, and when I say reasonable, I mean measures that are done on reason and not emotion. And you need to look at the dynamics of the industry and the economics of the industry in order to do that, because that's what drives all of this. All of us do this for love of money, not for glory. We need money to survive. We don't want to do menial tasks for free. And we need to get an economic return equal to the amount of work we're doing in this industry to have it survive.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Members of the commission, my name is Chris Moore. I'm the science advocate for the Chesapeake Bay Foundation here in Hampton Roads. You've got my letter, and so I won't comment on that again. But one of the things we've kept hearing today is degradation of water quality and loss of habitat is one of the problems facing this crab population. And the Bay Foundation completely agrees with that. Happy to report that the state of Virginia is doing something to increase water quality. Over the last 3 years, the General Assembly has designated over $650 million worth of funds to upgrade sewage treatment plants throughout the state of Virginia. With the bond package that was passed last year, it's hoped that all 129 sewage treatment plants in Virginia will be able to be upgraded to the best available treatment technology that we have to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus pollution in the bay. We think that will make a huge difference in water quality throughout the state and help this population. In addition, this year, for the first time, a broad-based coalition of agricultural and environmental interest went to the General Assembly hoping to secure funds for agricultural BMPs to put on the ground so that farmers throughout the watershed can put the necessary BMPs in place to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus pollution from their operations. This, again, will be a huge benefit to water quality. In addition to all those efforts, numerous groups, CBF, the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, and VMRC, are working on restoration projects to restore SAV habitats, oyster habitats, and wetland habitats throughout the bay that are very important to the blue crab's life cycle. It is our sincere hope that all of these restoration efforts, especially these water quality restoration improvement efforts, will serve as a very important component of restoring the blue crab population in Virginia. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, sir.
Good evening. I'm Diane Dowies from Tangier. I'd like to comment on a few things. Of course, you know, the sanctuary shortening, I think that's common. I wish there were a study done on that sanctuary shortening, because up the bay from, I don't know, I'd say lower end of the Rappahannock buoys on up, that's going to kill. That's going to absolutely take us out of the potting. Because we don't get started. I think we're the only people on the bay that didn't really care if it was April the 1st, because very rarely do we start before April the 1st anyway up our way. That's going to take, and not only that, I think when you look at the graph of when the sanctuary, and maybe I'll take a rough estimate, maybe Jack can tell me, I'd say that sanctuary is what, 85% of the bay, roughly? Good guess? All right, we'll just say 85% of the bay that sanctuary covers. And what you see on paper and what you see presented before you is that June 1st, everybody leaves the sanctuary. Well, you know, that's great. Everybody's gone. You know, no potting, no nothing. But where does everybody go? You know, you're all shoving us in one knot. And you know, we don't ever hear anything about that. I'm not saying lift it all, you know, but I think you need to take that into consideration. Where do we go May 15th when you take May 15th from us? Where's the next move most time in our area? I'm sure it is all over the bay, is in the creeks. You know, around the creeks, getting the shedded sooks, you know, all that kind of stuff. And what happens is that when you take that from us, you shove us all in one knot, and then you see a crab decline, you know. And you know, I think that's a part of it. Another thing I wanted to comment on was the crab dredging fishery that they said, I think Jack said, 50 to 75% of waste. I've never crab dredged on my own. I've done it on the Stern a number of years. Never done it on my own. But I do know in the past 2 years, you cannot dredge on them kind of crabs anymore. The market won't allow it. There's not that much waste as that number was presented to you. I know it seems like now when you hear of people going down on the hard bottom, you know, and dredging up crabs, it's almost like the buyers shrugged their shoulders and crinkled their nose because, you know, of that. And there's not that much dredging down there anymore. The peeler size, you already got a soft crab size. I mean, why up it? We've got a soft crab size limit. I think one shouldn't go without the other. And I really do think that as it's been said, I'm not going to go into it a whole lot, that I think that the commission needs to do more than just blame the watermen. I think the commission needs to do a whole lot more than just blame the watermen. This presentation was presented last month of this scientific report, if I heard it right. This was presented last month. The first thing that came out was overfishing. The very first thing come out was overfishing. That's what we heard. That's what was in the papers. That's what was anything. The grasslands is leaving. I know I crab the grasslands, crab scrape through the grass. It's leaving. Not because of watermen. I'm sure that's what your first thought is, or maybe some people's first thought. It's not because of watermen. It's because of shifting sand. It's because of a number of things, water content. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to go into that a whole lot. And I think you really need to consider. I don't think anything can be added to Mr. Jenkins' predator fish report. I think you really need to consider that. It's very, very important to the crabber's livelihood that you consider what's going on with the crab before you put a whole load of regulations that we can't bear. I almost want to say, just wait 10 more years. And let oil keep going up, and bait, and zinc, and wire, you ain't going to have nothing to worry about no way. We're probably going to all be gone anyway. But before you make the decision, I think, you know, it's very important that you put all that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Who's next? Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Kelly Price from the Eastern Shore.
Rice.
And I got my little story to tell. I've been a waterman for the last 25 years. I crab pot about 160 days out of the year. I've seen a lot of great years, and I've seen bad years crabbing. Last year, I put the catch at about average, but high market prices made it a good year. The season before was a great year for catch, but the worst of my 25 years for market. Example, the spring of 2006, the first day, I caught 33 bushels of crabs and had to sell those crabs for $8 a bushel. By the time I paid for my bait, fuel, labor, I cleared about $104 on 33 bushels of crabs. I was lucky. A lot of guys couldn't sell at all. And because of that spring, a lot of the crabbers got out of the business. Not because of lack of resource, but because of lack of market and money. In the season of 2007, there were about 40% less people crabbing than the years past. So that means 60 crabbers had to catch what 100 crabbers caught the years before to keep the same average. I think the scientists and you, the commission, have failed to look at this. And when you do, you will find the 2007 catch for each crabber was near average, especially when you factor in the 22 laws you put on us the past 10 years to reduce the harvest. Believe me, they had an effect. I thank you, the commission, have not studied this either. I, being a waterman for 25 years now, have experienced dealing with the Commission on Resource Matters. I've watched the Commission blame the watermen for the decline in the oysters in the Chesapeake Bay, but years later, they admitted disease killed them. I've dealt with VIMS and the Commission concerning the eelgrasses in Chesapeake Bay. They wanted us to stop clam dredging in about 3,300 acres of the bay. I told them the grasses were spreading and doing great. Bob Orth of VIMS admitted to this commission that the last year we dredged there, the grasses had expanded 600%. But the commission voted to stop us, so we had to give up 3,300 acres of prime clam grounds for the past 11 years. No one has dredged the area. Guess what? The grass is just about gone. The point I'm trying to make is water quality is the key. Without good water quality, you can't have good habitat, and without good habitat, we will lose all our resources in the bay, not just to crabs and oysters. I believe we crabbers will never catch crabs to the point of extinction. Our expenses are so much that we will have to quit before we get near that point. I also believe if you, the commission, regulate us out of business, the crab population won't change because of water quality and predators. You scientists and VIMS solve that problem, and Mother Nature will take care of the rest. I'm here today to ask the commission to back off the watermen, to let a few old guys finish the career they chose and loved. I also ask the commission and VIMS to do their duty and stand up and fight against the polluters of the bay, no matter how big or small. And if you can win that battle, you will save our bay for everyone and a few old watermen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Who's next? Yes, sir.
My name's James Riggins. I live in Yorktown. I'm a crab potter and a peeler potter. And I'm going to follow your instructions and say what the rest of the fellows said. I'll go along with it. A couple of things I'd like to add to it, though. The gentleman before this one talked about the quality of the product. Well, some years ago when we were deciding whether or not to make people use choline, I went to the meeting down at the school there off Hoffersville Road, and I wrote out a little paper and told them to file it. I doubt they did because they laughed at me when I told them. But I told them if you started using color inks, the quality of the crabs would go down because you let all the smaller crabs of the species free to repopulate and keep all the big ones. And it would start a chain reaction that would cause the species to be overcome by the smaller ones of the species, the small breeds. And there are different breeds of crabs. If anybody's ever crabbed any time, know that. The females are getting smaller. You don't need coal rings for a lot of them nowadays. They go right through the wire. I'm talking about mature crabs. And the reason for this is years ago, back when I was, I don't know how old, maybe not even born yet, they started making you throw away all the jimmies except the ones over 5 inches. Well, that had an effect. And then the cold rings came along. And you started letting the mature females go. Now, when they first started, you could take an average-sized female, pretty good, fairly good crab, not a big one. She'd run right through the color ring. Well, then you catch one a little bit bigger and keep her. Well, she never have any more babies. But the one you got away would. And she'd have babies with another smaller jimmy that went out of the same hole. And you wind up with a downslide. So my personal opinion is color rings ought to be voluntary, where they do the good. Getting rid of juvenile crabs, use them. Yeah. Where they do harm by letting the smaller of the breed go away that are mature, you shouldn't use them at all. So that's my little talk on that. And another thing, you're talking about putting a, this might help, but it's adding an oversized crab. You're out there culling crabs. It's 96 degrees and the humidity's high. And you're trying to keep the small ones out. You got a little stick to measure them with. Now you've got to have another stick there to measure the big ones. You wind up having to pick up every single crab you catch. It's almost impossible to do something like that. And people get together and try to decide what's a good thing to do. And they try to do it based on the knowledge they have. Now, the fishermen of the state, the ones that have been in it for years, have considerable knowledge. The scientists, Dr. Liscombe, and so forth, they have considerable knowledge also. But if you put all our knowledge together, it wouldn't be 1% of what we need to make intelligent regulations. We don't know that much. A crab's down in the water, he goes where he wants, he does what he wants. And we know some of the habits of them, that they go this way and that certain times of the year. But you get fun. Everybody has their own opinion. Mr. Lipkus thinks they have an invisible highway where when a crab gets ready to spawn, she jumps in that and runs to the middle of the bay. It doesn't happen. Crabs spawn all over the bay. They spawn in the shallows. They spawn up in the rivers. So, you know, that's his opinion. And I don't know how much scientific data he has to make that opinion. Another opinion he has is all the crabs go out into the ocean time to hatch. Well, I catch crabs so little you can't hardly see them 30 miles from the ocean. He ain't have time to swim up there from where he was. So, I'm not trying to be disrespectful for him. He knows a lot more in certain things about crabs than I do, I'm sure. But the thing of it is none of us know enough. And we start talking about more and more complicated restrictions to put on crabbers. And I'm a realist. I know standing here, you're going to do something. I don't have any doubt you're going to do something. So why not make it simple? If you want us to catch a certain amount of crabs, you know how many of us have license. Do the math and figure out how many crabs a day we can catch and come up with that amount and put the limit there. every day, every boat, one boat, if it's 10 bushels, 15, 20, whatever you come up with, and make it across the board for everybody. It's simple. It's easy. And from what little knowledge we have of the crab and his that book, Magnificent Swimmer, it tells us, you know, the mysteries of him. We don't know all that much. But if you really want to come up with a number, put us on a limit. That'll make it simple. We don't need sanctuaries. We don't need anything else. We can just have so many crabs. And it's simple, and everybody can understand it. We don't have to wonder which shade of sponge crab is legal. You ever tried to call when you was catching a pot full of sponge crabs and half of them in between, and you sitting there trying to decide, which way do I put him? And you put him a certain way, and you get to the dock, and the man comes and looks at him, and he's got another opinion on that little shade. You know, you put regulations that put hardships on us that we can't, even when we try, go along with them. So, I just make it simple. If you're really serious about it, outlaw mechanical pot pullers. I guarantee that'll reduce that. So quit playing around. Pick what you want to do. Make it simple. Make it across the board for everybody. This foolishness of people crabbing in the bay can fish 500 pots, but if you're up in the upper part, you got to have 300 and one thing or another. It's unfair. If a man up in the bay is fishing 500, and I'm fishing up around the mouth of the river, York River, Coastal River, wherever, I can't have a 300, how am I going to compete with him? You know? So, some simplification should be done. Pick a regulation that'll work, that's easy to enforce, that's simple, that everybody can understand, and goes along, attends to everybody, and do it. And one more thing, we're all worried about the crabs. Crabbers are just more worried than you are about them. But the crabber is just as threatened as the crabs are. If you put too much hardships on us, we'll be gone. And you can't eat crabs if somebody doesn't catch them. So, and people that work in the water, the crab potters, they're good people. They're just as good as any other group of people. We don't try to destroy everything. But every time trouble comes, they turn to us. Now, I want to put a hypothetical thing up to you. Suppose Dr. Lipkus stumbles on an amazing scientific discovery that if he reduced all y'all's income 20%, there'd be plenty of crab. Would y'all agree with, you know, would y'all go along with that? You'd want to know very certainly that he was exactly right. You know. Now, I'm not saying this to be cute. I'm trying to get the message over to you that you're dealing with people's lives, people's incomes. We have to pay the light bill every month. We have groceries to buy, gasoline for the automobile, fuel for the boats, and it's over $3 a gallon. How much can we stand? So all I'm asking, if you're bound and determined to do something, get rid of the junk and pick one thing that's easy to enforce across the board for everybody, so everybody has the same chance, and do it. You know, it doesn't take a science. You've got the numbers. You've got the records of the catches. You know how many licenses there are for crab pots. You can go to don't even need a computer, a calculator, in a few minutes, figure out how many crabs per boat that is. Well, why not just go that way instead of all this complicated mess? Having to call two or three different kinds of crabs.
Mr. Riggins, I think we got that point.
You got that?
I got it.
Okay.
Loud and clear.
Thank you very much. And that's about all I have to say. I appreciate you listening to me.
Pleasure.
And have a little heart for us. We are having a hard time out there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Who's next? Yes, sir. Kathy, can you turn the air conditioner up a little bit, or Michelle?
Please.
Or should I say, make it cooler in here?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm Jim Waterfield from Knott's Island, North Carolina.
Good to have you here in the Commonwealth.
And yes, I would. The situation being that the Back Bay crabbers up there, our crab in Back Bay, Virginia Beach Session, are we going to have to apply with this, which really our North Carolina stock is really what we're getting. You know what I'm talking about up there?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. If you're in the waters of the Commonwealth, you have to comply with Virginia regulations.
All right. Then when are y'all going to start enforcing them?
How many you want down there tomorrow?
Well, what I'm trying to say is I've come here really as a crabber, but
because I'm sure some of these
first one gets the ticket. But there is what I'm complaining about is I pay the $4.44 out of state harvesting fee.
Okay.
The problem is there's about 10 North Carolina crabbers up there, and they're not paying the fee.
Okay.
And I just don't think that that's right. We've complained about it before. These people will come up there and they'll write. I've got one number in mind right now. He's up there, Elon. He don't know no more about a Virginia license than to say.
Mr. Waterfield, do your comments have to do with the regulations that are before the commission today?
Yes, sir, they do.
Okay, can you restrain your comments to that? If you've got a complaint about the enforcement, you can call Colonel Lauderman and we'll work that. But we really want to work on these today if we can.
Okay, sir.
Thank you. Who's next? Yes, sir. And then you, ma'am, next.
My name's Ty Farrington.
I'm good to have you.
Local commercial fisherman. Been doing it for 25 years. I'm a year-round crabber. I depend on this fishery to support my family. And I'm here to tell you what my opinion is about why the reduction in the blue crab is happening. First is a proven fact of pollution. Other people have gone over it. This gentleman here, Chris, has told me some reasons of what's going on to improve it. But the massive growth of the residential waterfront property, mostly the runoff of fertilizer and pesticides, is affecting the shellfish and the filter, which we know filter the water for its food and is affecting the crab by killing the larvae before it gets a chance to become the baby crab. Yesterday, the Daily Press, VMRC spokesman John Bull said, "We can't make the water any cleaner. We can't make the seagrass grow faster." And Chris answered some steps, what's being done to create, to stop these things. How do we know the spraying for mosquitoes isn't also killing these crab? The water quality is the biggest contributing factor for seagrass growth, marine life, reproduction, and lifespan. Treat the Chesapeake Bay and the tributaries as a giant aquarium. If lack of oxygen if lack of oxygen is the issue, then we need to put giant aerators in certain areas to feed it air. All right. If pollution's killing what needs to be in the water to reproduce the marine life, we need to find out what we can put in the water to stimulate that marine life and reduce the pollution. The abundance of natural predators, we've gone over that. The one thing, and I know a lot of people here are going to disagree and not like what I got to say, but it's not the last. Peelers and soft crab industry is killing the crab population. The peeler pies have gone to every river, creek, and even ditches to catch the peelers. They have stripped the waterways of the most important part of the future of the blue crab, the juvenile blue crab. It does not take a college education to figure out that if you eliminate the juvenile blue crabs, you eventually eliminate the blue crab. There are not enough juvenile crabs to grow up and reproduce more crabs. Pilipotter gear is the least regulated crab gear of all. They have only three restrictions on them that I'm aware of. 3-inch point-to-point minimum size, 8-inch work day, and how they bait their pots. Why is that? Why not limit their catch? Why not a coal ring in their pots? Why not put sanctuaries in different rivers and creeks? Why not a standard 5-inch jimmy law on them also? Why were they allowed to grow from 506 licenses in 94 to 982 issued in 99, almost doubling? As of 2007, they are the only crab gear license sold that is larger now than it was in 94. It's my opinion, and the opinion of other crabbers, that if something is not done about peeler potting peelers, the crabs will never have a chance to rebound like the rockfish and their other predators. If you look at the crab catch history, it's obvious. The crabs started to deplete in the early 90s, directly after the explosion of the peeler pot and soft crab industry. And the chart right there shows it. And that explosion was in the mid-80s. The peeler potters, everyone multiplied their peeler pot amounts and went everywhere to catch them. With these three issues out of control, the pollution, predators, and peeler potters,
hey,
you
hey,
come up and have something to say?
Wait a minute. Address the chair, and please keep the comments down. Right. Been civil through this. Let's continue.
With these three issues out of control, I'd like to make these suggestions. Do not put any new regulations, restrictions on the hard crab gear. If anything, do away with the coal ring and quit letting these small breeder crabs loose to keep breeding and overrunning the Virginia waters. I believe the small crab will eventually run the larger crabs out of the Virginia waters. They do not school together. I catch them all year round, and I will see crabs in one area, big crabs in one area, and small crabs in others. Make all crab pot gear licenses the same, up to 500. This will reduce the state cost of stamping multiple different tags and increase the revenue also by not stamping the year on the tags and issue a yearly decal with licenses or when licenses are purchased. No agent use of rigs, crab pot peeler, or dredge. It will reduce the amount of licenses. People will not put 1,000 pots in the water using other people's licenses to fish them. License holder must be on the boat to fish the rig. Do away with the black sponge law. This law forces crabbers to leave the bay in lower river areas, go up the rivers to catch the much-needed jimmy. This change will help the jimmy population and help the local crab processing plants survive. To counter this change, reduce the daily limit to 12 barrels or 36 bushels until the crabs rebound. Then we can consider if the crabs in the market can stand such an increase. We already have set crab seasons. Leave them as they stand. Do away with recreational crab pots. The Daily Press yesterday stated that there was a tagging system in place. There was no tagging system in place. Now, then why do I engrave every buoy with my commercial number? This identifies my crab pot to the VMRC and the Marine Police. Tagging pots and buoys will never work because of the never-ending loss of crab pots. Examples, buoys getting cut off from vessel traffic, storm, grass and pipelines dragging them off, and a good old thief stealing them. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, sir.
If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them now or later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good day. Ma'am?
Excuse me, one last thing. Did you say the over-harvesting of crabs is the biggest problem? Then why is the stone crab, spider crab, starfish, hermit crabs, why are they depleting? I catch them all year round. I dredge and I crab pot. I don't see the hermit crabs in my crab pots. I don't see as many spider crabs in my crab pots. I dredge in the winter. I don't see the stone crabs out in the bay. Yeah. If it's over harvesting, then why are they going? We're not over harvesting them.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Hi. I'm Dee Turner from Gwen's Island. I'm a waterman's wife. Just a few things. I know regulations are going to be put in place, so I'm here to look at the nuts and bolts. The 10 crabs that are going to be in the peelers that can be culled, is that in reference to the white line peelers, or is that in reference to the size? Or is there going to be
that's two? That's up for debate.
That's going to be a debate.
Yes, ma'am.
Then my other question with the white line peelers are, white lines were coming into the same subjective eye of cushion colors. So that's my question there.
Taking that into consideration.
No offense, but a lot of men are colorblind. So,
other things too.
I know. I'm the one who's up every 3 hours fishing those. So, yeah. The only other thing I had was on the dredging. My husband's dredged. December, we got 13 days in. January, we got 11. And I can tell you for February, it's going to be even less. The weather, you know, I know you're thinking of it's capped already. I understand that. But I know that Jack said there was like 60-some-odd licenses. There were not that many boats working this winter. They have not been out there. So, and the other thing is I know this is for proposals for next month, the 50% reduction, I won't be a waterman's wife any longer. I'll be a wife. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Kathy, is somebody working on the air conditioning, or is it not working, or? I know we paid the rent last month. Anyway, who's next?
That's it.
Mr. Graham?
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner and members of the commission. My name is Johnny Graham, and I'm from Graham Rollins in Hampton, Virginia. We obviously have a problem in the bay concerning the blue crab. It is very unfortunate that the prior 22 management regulations that we've adopted over the span of 15 years have not proven to be effective in the recovery effort of our resource. Further management options are prudent and should be adopted and implemented with the objective of not just increasing population of crabs in the bay, but also addressing the quality of our resource. My company, Graham & Rollins, has been processing approximately 3 to 5 million pounds of blue crabs annually for the last 6 years. These crabs obviously were not all from the Chesapeake Bay, but from Delaware all the way down through Florida into the Gulf region. Without a doubt, our crab stock / size is far inferior to any other harvesting jurisdictions. This has not happened overnight, but it has deteriorated over the last 10 or so years. I have not seen this dramatic size reduction in any other states or any other jurisdictions' crabs that I currently buy outside of this state. The proposed regulations before the Commission today, for the most part, represent refinements to current regulations. I don't think these proposed regulations will achieve the objective. Measuring crabs, color-coding sponges, detecting color signage on back fin of peelers is not only judgmental, but damaging to the resource. In my opinion, we need to move away from discretionary regulations that are proven difficult to enforce and move towards regulations which can be enforced, such as a sanctuary. There are two things that I know to this day that we have been effective in management, and that's when a crabber works and where he can work. All the other stuff, you know, is judgmental, and we see it in everyday life. We got speed limits posted on a highway, and we make the judgment to break the speed limit, you know, and we pay the consequences. Same thing with a hard crab. I studied economics in college, and I know markets work and incentives matter. And there has to be enforcement, and there has to be means of monitoring, okay? If a guy can sell an undersized crab or a crab out of shade or color, and there's a market there for it, he's going to go find it. I apologize for missing the first part of the discussion. I really wanted to hear all the other speakers speak. But coming in when I did, I picked up on a few things that I thought were very key in some of the discussion. On the call ring issue, when we put the call rings in, to my knowledge, the call rings were basically implemented to release the smaller class crab into tributaries, to allow the smaller crabs to escape. They're in the bay, obviously, because we felt there was a small class of mature crab that was being wasted in the processing houses and thrown in trash barrels and not being processed. Now we've got a proliferation of smaller class crabs in the bay, and the jury's out on as the call ring calls this or not. I've heard from two scientific communities out there that says it is not the problem. I'm not a scientist, and I'm not going to sit here and contradict what they have to say. All I can do is reflect back. How does the call ring spawn that animal to grow up to the size that it is? The call ring didn't make the crab. The call ring was bred. It was bred with a male crab, okay? The male is just as much of a concern in that element, you know, than the female crab, okay? You know, I'm with a lot of these watermen and the fact that maybe we did this thing and we didn't look into it the way we probably should have, but I still think back of the process. And also, to argue that point, all these other states that have call rings, again, I'm not seeing the dramatic size decrease in their crab stock. So something's going on, and it's not just the call ring to blame. As far as the dredge issue, 2 weeks ago, I didn't even know it was even to be discussed. But I saw it in the paper the other day, and I will tell you, for the last 2 years, Grandma Rollins has not bought a dredge crab, and that's in the history of our company. We were dependent upon dredge crabs for a long time, but we're not even as active in that fishery, not because they're not available, but because our picking industry has changed such that our workforce are not around during the winter months. And the economics of it have degraded that fishery so much now that you've got 20 or 30 people that are left working that fishery, and to go out there and pull the rug out from underneath them is just not fair. Not to mention, if we correct our situation, we want to have that fishery there in place for these guys, for the few year-round watermen that are left in this fishery, to have the job and the ability to go out and harvest crabs year-round. Not to mention, a gentleman spoke about Virginian products and marketing, but we don't want to be labeled in Virginia as having a part-time crab processing fishery or a crab processing industry. We don't want our markets to know that it's impossible for Virginia to be selling fresh crab meat because their season's only now from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and that's the end of it. We want to have the flexibility to have a year-round fishery. You know, with 20 or 30 people are still left in a fishery, how much savings are we really talking about? And as far as the waste and the resource, there's other industries that participate in this industry that have waste as well, and they should be addressed. As far as the environment's concerned, I'm with these guys 100%. You know, we've lost our grass beds. We've lost our oysters. We've got cow nose rays now. We can't catch them up. We've got croakers. We've got striped bass. We got all that stuff going against us, and there's not anything anybody in this room or agency is going to do to fix it today, tomorrow, next year, probably within 10 years. And that's a fact. And we all have to live with that and realize that this group up here right now is in a pressure cooker. They've got the press on them. They have got to respond to that situation, and they've got to respond now, not next year, now. And I am, for one, in agreement that we are in trouble, we are at rock bottom, and we have got to act. So, environmental situations we can't control. We can work on fixing them, but it ain't going to happen overnight. There's probably a lot more watermen that go out of the crab business before the environment gets straight. I've heard mention of the crab processing industry. I am the last crab processor left in Hampton. There was 13 of us 30 years ago. There were 77 licensed plants in Virginia back in the mid-80s. We got about 20 now, and up to 20, three of them have more than 15 pickers. And those three are in jeopardy this year of losing their workforce. In fact, they've already lost their workforce. And it could very easily happen that we're not going to be a faction anymore at all. The discussion about sponge crab, in reference to the fact that our industry has gone, the effort and target of that animal is not there any longer. We don't have people in the bay working trying to catch sponge crabs anymore. So the thought of banning them or putting more in the water is going to reflect a change in that. You know, I would argue that with anybody. I've been hearing banned sponge crabs all my life. And here we are down to one plant left, one real plant left. I got one boat working in Hampton, the crab capital. Do we really think sponge crabs is going to fix that problem? What has happened in that time span in our industry? Look back to that graph when we had this cycle. And you can go beyond 1990, and it was just like that. Up and down, up and down. And then we had a dramatic fall off. You can go to that map right there, and you can argue that the eelgrass left, the rockfish came in, the croakers came in, the cow nose rays came in, the water quality went to you-know-what. But also, we had a proliferation. We had a proliferation of people exiting the hard crab fishery and going into another fishery. And I'm not sitting here talking about the peeler potter. I am talking about the peeler potter, but I'm also talking about people going to harvest male crab. Let's be honest. A man mentioned a pot puller. Technology, the available technology that's out there today has gotten us where we are. We've got radios on our hips. We got global economy, air freight, trucking, transportation up and down the East Coast that has allowed markets to change and the incentive to go change with those markets and the money you can make in those markets. That's where the effort has gone. It's gone after the male crab fishery. Big money. It's gone off to soft crabs. Big money. Why catch a dredge crab? Why catch a sponge crab? Not a whole lot of money. Okay? The market has shifted. The crabbers have responded. I dare to say there's, you know, 24 Chesapeake Bay dead rises that work the water any longer. What's everybody working in now? They're working in skiffs. Were they working in skiffs 20, 30 years ago? No. Why? Because that market really wasn't as strong as it is right now. Is that market going to go away? Probably not. Okay? So, and I don't blame the watermen, and I don't blame the peeler fishery and the soft crab fishery. Economics will dictate where you're going to go make your living. If you can't make it here and you can make it over there, then that's where you're going. And that's exactly where people have gone. They've redirected their focus and emphasis and work ethic towards something that's meaningful to them where they're going to make money. Okay? Which is why I advocate sanctuaries. Okay? Let's get out of measuring crabs and grading them and counting and going to somebody's catch and throwing half of it back overboard and finding them for something that's out of their control. They've got enough things on them already with the rising economy and the cost of doing business and fuel and everything else. It's just a tremendous hardship. You know, and I know the creeks and tributaries is very valuable to these people, but I can rationalize with what I said earlier about the breeding, why our crabs are getting smaller. Our estuary is made up of creeks and ditches and tributaries, and we know, undeniably, that's where breeding takes place, and that's where males live and reside, okay? And that's where a lot of our effort has shifted, into the rivers and tributaries, okay? So let's not you know, create all the hardship on the peeler pot fishery. Let's go into an area of management like we have with the middle of the bay. We know through studies and charts and graphs and trawl data that an overwhelmingly abundance of female egg-bearing crabs exists in that sanctuary within the bay. And we've yet to expand it 4 times in 10 years to try to put more crabs into the bay. And have we done anything really by doing that? That chart indicates not. So, let's turn over another stone. Let's get out of more stringent regulations on increasing a size or these things that we're looking at. Let's look at sanctuaries and safeguard zones to protect the other side of the resource. Not so much target the peeler people. It will impact them. But the point being is we protect the watershed where all the breeding and the mating and all that stuff takes place. And I'm not saying making it permanent because that creates a hardship on somebody that we don't want to put on anybody. We can rotate it. We can move it around. We can regulate it by depth of water. For instance, anywhere where a crab pot ebbs out of the water on mean low water, as an example, should be off limits. You know, We have ways to look at maps, nautical maps, and we know the relative mean tide of some of these creeks and ditches and estuaries. And if the average in that estuary is less than 4 feet on mean low water, or just an arbitrary number, put a sign on either side of the bank, no crab harvesting beyond this point. Not permanent, maybe for half the season and do it somewhere else for the other half of the season. But I guarantee you, I mean, think about this.
Mr. Graham, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Okay.
Just for a little bit. I mean,
Maryland has a totally disconnect with what we're regulating, how they regulate. They don't allow crab pots in the rivers and tributaries, and we do. Major disconnect, okay? So let that be, you know, something food for thought for you all to consider in your future deliberations.
Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate it. Anyone else? Mr. Place?
Good afternoon. I'm Kelly Place, Director of Research and Policy for the Coastal Virginia Watermen Association. I'm not up here to advocate for any one of the particular measures that are before you. I really feel for you. I know you have a really tough decision to make, and we all want the crabs to be brought back. However, I do, whatever decisions you all make, I'd like you to make them in the context of this. You've heard a lot of the environmental problems that are going on, and within the context of a downward spiraling ecosystem, today's sustainable fishing will be tomorrow's overfishing. And I second what Mr. Graham said. I do want to point out some ways, though, that the Commission, like other agencies of the state, could do something. As you know, and I mentioned this at the workshop, some 40% of the bay is habitually considered a dead zone, doesn't have enough oxygen to support life. And as I mentioned at the workshop, one of my main concerns is the fish kill or crab kill that we see on the microscopic and the semi-microscopic level. When you've got that big an area of the bay comprising an anoxic situation, and when all the species that we fish for have larval forms that are subject to the wind, the tide, the waves, then just by almost definition, there's a major fish kill going on at the larval stage. Now, I'm not mentioning these things at all to excuse whatever you all have to do to restrict the fishery and make it sustainable, but just today I was looking at the agenda, and I see, and I don't know whether you approve this, I apologize for being late to this meeting, but I see that on the agenda, and you may have approved this, for Virginia Natural Gas, there were 211,270. Just continued. Well, good. I think that's great that you did continue, because let me bring up one thing about that. And it's just one example of many projects that are on your agenda that either restore or preserve habitat or permit its destruction. And this one thing, 211 and some thousand cubic yards, if you put all those cubic yards end to end, that's over 120 miles of cubic yards of sediment. When you dredge that, that's just one example of one permit. When you have that kind of activity going on, and it may be necessary, but I sure hope, and I'm assuming that VIMS has given you advice on how to minimize or mitigate the impacts, but regardless of how much you minimize or mitigate those, there's no doubt that Virginia Natural Gas is out to do, like any other business, as little as they can because it costs them money. But I just wanted you to know that this permit and many others, the King William Reservoir, for example, both your staff and the VIMS twice opined against that permit because it was the worst place in the worst river to put such a project. When we have these type of permits that are going on, and there are other agencies in the state, I realize, that do this, it's all going directly against sustaining or restoring any of these fisheries. In that context of the declining ecosystem, like I said, today's fishing will be tomorrow's overfishing. So I do want you to realize, when you feel pressure to grant permits, I do want you to realize the context we're working under, and that's this, that we are under a federal consent decree, a federal court order to remove the bay and the tributaries from the impaired waterway list by 2010. You've also probably heard recently everyone saying, oh, we're not going to make it. Well, of course we're not going to make it. We're granting environmentally destructive permits hand over fist, and it seems that we're...
Mr. Place, please, we're really wrangling with the crab issue, and I know where you're going from the water quality aspect of it.
I'm just asking you that in order to restore the crabs, which is your charge here today, that you can't really put everything on the watermen, and I would urge you to start turning down some of these permits, and as your excuse when they politically pressure you or pressure threaten to dissolve the VMRC like they did in 2004 to subrogate your subaqueous authority to another agency, I would point out to them that this Commonwealth is under this federal consent decree, and some people out here, like myself, we're starting to keep score. So when the feds come and they decide whether they're going to order Virginia to do the things that need to be done to take the bear off the impaired waterway list, already I see a lot of the politicians backstepping and wanting to cover and asking for extensions. Well, that's the only way it'll ever get done is through extensions, because if you're keeping score, you'll recognize that the reason we're in such environmental straits, and looking at that graph, the reason the crabs, even in response to reduced effort, don't go up and down like they used to, is that we're basically in a situation where large parts of the water and the habitat no longer will sustain the resource. And I would just encourage you, along with whatever restrictions you decide are necessary today, to start sending a message to people that the damage that's caused by the permits they ask from you is not free, that someone's paying. Today it's the crabbers that'll be paying, and you know it has to be done. And I feel for y'all having to make these decisions, but these decisions are being done, and the symptoms are in a greater context.
Thank you, Kelly. Anyone else? All right. Yes, sir. Anyone else after this gentleman wish to speak? If not, the public hearing will be closed. Thank you.
My name is Jimmy Riggins. I live in Yorktown.
Mr. Riggins.
Mr. Riggins, there's my father. And it took me 36 years, but I finally learned he's always right. But I'm a fourth-generation commercial fisherman. There's nothing else I want to do. I've tried a couple of different things, and I just love to do it. Yeah, my grandfather did, great-grandfather and all that. And the economy like it is right now, I'm a half a breath away from doing something else. Either going tugboat and Home Depot, I don't know. But I can guarantee you, you pass all these regulations, it stops with me. It ends. And I don't want to see it. I don't think anybody does. So I ask you, you know, the fuel is higher than it's ever been. It's going higher every day. And the price of crab pot zinc is directly related to that. Crab pot wire, everything you touch has tripled and quadrupled in price. And the price of the catch and the amount of the catch has pretty much stayed the same. Just table it for a while, give it a couple of years, and I'm pretty positive it'll take care of itself. And that's pretty much all I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Riggins.
Thank you.
Dr. Monfon. I didn't see your hand up over there. I'm sorry. Peripheral vision's going as the temperature goes up. Go ahead.
It's a safe place to be sitting at this point. Commissioner Bowen, members of the commission, thanks for this short time I have. I'm going to take less than a minute of your time. I'm from VIMS. My name is Jackson Monfrance, and one of the consistent themes in this hearing has been the issue of predation on blue crabs, and it's a theme that's also near and dear to my heart. I was the one that one of the participants, major participants in the study on predation that we undertook in seagrass beds. And I'd just like to say to the watermen in the audience that I would be more than happy to come to any of their Watermen's Association meetings and present the results of our work to them. And it was really the watermen that prompted this work in the beginning because of the concerns over fishing and all the crabs. I'd be happy to discuss what we did to them and generate some new ideas about other topics we could pursue along those lines.
Sounds good.
So just call VIMS and
appreciate the offer.
Thank you.
Before I turn the matter over to the commission for discussion, I'd like to read two letters. The first is from Delegate Albert Pollard from Northern Neck. Dear Commissioner Bowman, a brief note to thank you and the Marine Resources Commission for your attention to the problems we are facing regarding the current low levels of crab population. I believe such drastic measures are sadly required because previous efforts have fallen short of achieving the desired effort. While none of the proposed restrictions makes easy choices, we can hopefully take action now and alleviate future low levels of crab population. I realize the implementation of proposed regulations will have a resulting negative impact on the livelihood of honest and hard-working commercial fishermen. I certainly hope efforts will be made to minimize such impacts while hitting the desired catch separate targets. To critics of this letter, I can only say that I fear a lack of action will mean permanent unemployment for the commercial fishing sector of my economy. I would like to further suggest that the issue of dredge fishing and a restriction on taking sponge crabs be added to the agenda in order to reduce the total catch effort and thus preserve the fishery. The dredge and sponge crab fisheries are almost completely focused on the sook and cannot be rationalized with today's depleted resource. Hopefully, by mixing proposed existing regulations and the reduction in the dredging and sponge crab fisheries, the total catch effort can be well below the target threshold recommended by current science. Thank you. I know your choices are not easy, and I appreciate your time and attention. Very truly yours, Albert C. Pollard. The next one is a letter written by both Senator Richard H. Stewart of the Northern Neck and Senator Ralph Northam of Norfolk and of the Eastern Shore. Dear Commissioner Bowman, we want to thank you and Mr. Travelstead for attending the meeting at my office on February 19, 2008, and discussing the issues facing our blue crab population. Your willingness to discuss these matters and to try to come up with real solutions to the problem exhibits your dedication on behalf of our watermen and the population of crabs alike. To that end, we acknowledge and agree with your short-term remedial recommendations that you and Mr. Travelstead went over with us and think they will go a long way toward improving a sustainable population of crabs in our waters. We would, however, urge you, as I discussed in our office, to strongly consider a moratorium on the dredging of crabs as well as a moratorium on the harvesting of what is commonly referred to as sponge crabs. These two measures, in addition to the short-term remedial recommendations that you have provided, we believe will dramatically improve the population of our blue crabs. As we discussed, the dredge crabs are generally a poor crab, and the meat is not as preferred as to those that are potted during the regular season. Likewise, the sponge crab is also a poor quality meat and certainly not nearly as desirable as the ones that are not laden with eggs, not to mention the fact that even though a smaller number of the eggs on the females actually make it to maturity, in crisis situations such as this, every egg counts. Once again, we do appreciate you meeting with us. By his signature below, Senator Northam joins in this request to urge you to strongly consider imposing a moratorium on the dredging of crabs and the harvesting of sponge crabs. If we can be of further assistance to you, please don't hesitate to contact us. With kindest regards, we are Senator Richard Stewart and Senator Ralph Northam. The matter is before the Commission for discussion and action. Mr. Bowden.
I ask to open this. A lot of you know me in the audience, a lot of you don't. I am a full-time working waterman, one of the few of us that's left. I was encouraged by what Mr. Moore said about the General Assembly taking some action to improve water quality in the sewage treatment plant. That's definitely a point source of pollution, but there's so many non-point sources that pales in comparison. We definitely have a water quality problem. I don't think anyone would deny that. At the risk of stepping on some pretty big toes, this is a problem from small local municipalities all the way through the federal government. Nobody wants to stifle any kind of economic development. The first thing a person does when they buy a waterfront parcel is cut down all the trees to improve their view. That gives clear access for any pollution to enter the waterway. Over the many years, we've always had buffer zones, wooded areas around the creeks and rivers and stuff, that acted as a natural filtering system to reduce the pollution runoff. We no longer have that in a lot of areas, and it's getting worse. A former colleague of mine and a good friend, Cynthia Jones, was talking about the bay one day, and she summed it up. It's dying the death of 1,000 wounds, and that's exactly what it is, and we're responsible for some of them. I will say I'm glad over the last several years that this commission has really taken some hardline actions against people who have disregarded environmental laws, and I hope that continues, and I hope it accelerates. Nobody has suffered as much from the crab decline as the crabbers have. They're the people who have suffered the most. Have they had anything to do with it? Maybe some, but definitely nowhere near the overfishing that's been attributed to them. We have some very large predator problems, striped bass being one of them, croakers, and channel cat. The channel cat was definitely something that was introduced, and it's a top-line predator. Later today, we'll be discussing the Arrakansett oyster project, and there's been a lot of opposition to that. I think the downside to having a good restoration project would be cleaner water, and a thriving oyster industry. I don't see we're at the downside. On the channel cat, we've introduced the predator. U.S. Fish and Wildlife would want every one of them removed. It's a non-native species. It's having a devastating effect on native species. You'll never see a shad recovery as long as they're there, not alone blue crabs. Once the industry is gone, it's gone. You know, we're down to, Mr. Nixon said there was no picking houses left. There is one left on the eastern shore now. But when it's gone, it's gone. No one's going to be able to afford to buy waterfront land to put any kind of processing facility, whether it be crabs, finfish, or otherwise. It just, you know, it's priced out of the existence of it. And I think the main problem we have is not what we take out of the water. It's what we're putting into the water. You know, we're to the point now that, you know, suggested earlier, it may be 10 years down the road when we see an improvement in water quality. I'm 54 years old. I like to live to the time that we see an increase in water quality. I really feel that way. It's something that really needs to be done. Seriously, we need to do it at all levels. We all need to contact our people. I don't want to see any one group, any one segment of this industry unduly targeted. I think if we have to come up with a reduction, and we do, I'm going to be honest, you know, the numbers do not look good. The sad thing is, I made this statement at a meeting. I had to talk to a lot of the crabbers. The sad thing is, there's nothing this commission really can do to improve water quality. There's no real steps we can take to reduce the predator problem. So the only segment we can control is the commercial watermen. And we're disappearing faster than anything. You know, when I was young, it was 13 shucking houses on Chincoteague. Now we have none. There's a few local places that shut enough for their own market, and that's it. And we're very fast getting the same problem now with the crab industry. So I have one request from Mr. Travelstead. Will you put back the proposed regulations that we are considering today? Because I think we need to debate some of them one at a time. I don't think this is a blanket cure. I think some things we need to do, other things are just going to have a punitive effect with no real resource gain.
There's two slides.
Thank you.
We'll go through them live. We want to earn the first one.
Thank you.
We have that now.
Mr. Bowman, how do you want to do these one at a time, or would you? I mean, the call ring.
Well, what I think we'd like to do is I want to hear the comments that you can use it as a template to go line by line and let us know what you think, and if the other members need it to be switched back and forth, we'll do that as well. So, you have the floor.
I think the call ring issue has a lot of support. Will it work? Does it reduce overall the size of crabs? That's something we really don't know. You know, it could and it could not. But it's something we know that it is going to allow a certain amount of females to escape. It's going to have more effect on the seaside than it would on, for example, on the tributaries and stuff on the western side of the bay. On the season limits, the year before last, when we had April 1st opening, Mr. Price alluded to the problem. Everybody came online the same day, Maryland, the Chesapeake Bay, the Eastern Shore. The Eastern Shore seaside has the smallest crabs, and it's just, you know, it can be salinity, it could be genetics, and I'm not a scientist, and I'm really glad I'm not today. Because they have been hammered pretty hard. I think we need to maintain the March 17th opening. Mr. Travelstead last year made the statement that it did not increase overall mortality. It just shifts it from one time to another. If we're going to have reductions, and we are going to have reductions at the end of the day, we're going to have significant changes. We need to keep the times when people can maximize their profits intact. Because a bushel of female crabs is just as important when it's $8 when it is $40. So the watermen need the high-priced crabs, and we're going to have to make decisions. On the peeler crabs, the 3 1/4 inch is probably going to have probably more effect really on crab traps than the peeler powder. it's going to have more effect on the seaside than it is on the bayside. But everybody knows we're going to have to make concessions. And even though it's not really looked upon as a joyful event, I think people realize that's one thing we're going to have to do. So I think that's something that I can live with. The inspection protocol, I'm very glad to see that, because people were really worried about, you know, you have people who really are not in the seafood industry that have come online as MPOs from sheriff's departments.
Sure, I understand.
And they may not know the correct handling of them. And it's not a very good thing for you to learn while you're doing it. The white sign crabs, you know, that's probably a good concept, but I don't see how you can do it. It's completely subjective. It's your opinion versus mine. I think it's something that definitely needs to be worked on, and I think it's something we need to do in the future, but we all need to be on the same page. Industry has to get aboard, along with...
And law enforcement.
With law enforcement, and come to something. So that's not something we can do today.
Okay.
But, the crab sanctuary, I know it's going to have uneven effect on some people compared to others, but the other items I've mentioned, too, have been the same way. You know, and hopefully it doesn't have an uneven effect on the same people. I'm hoping we're spreading it out across things. The use of agents is something we definitely need to address. It's something that needs to be addressed a long time ago. I look at this as an interim measure because a lot of people have already geared up for this season. They have people as agents. They've spent money. So I'm concerned this is a buyout year. This year, it's something that definitely needs to be looked at in the future. And as Mr. Travelstead said, it may be something that can be tweaked due to the stock survey. We're going to have that really to know where we're at. On the crab dredge fishery, I can support the cap as an interim measure until we come back with something in April. The problem I have with that, I think, is a legal problem, and I'm sure we have a very good counsel that can comment on this. The problem I see is, I believe 3 years ago, we told people they did not have to buy a license and did not have to participate to keep their permit to go crab dredging. And now we're using the criteria that we set forth, that they did not go and they did not buy their license, so now they can't go crab dredging. So we're saying they can't do it because they did what we said. And I think, you know, that might pose a legal problem. But I'm not a lawyer.
I think the code.
I'm really glad I'm not that.
Paul, doesn't the code give flexibility in situations like this?
That Carl can comment on.
I'm going to refrain at this point. I don't know the answer.
Well, okay. Further, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard a lot of excellent comments today, as we did in our last Blue Crab Subcommittee meeting, and I'd like to speak to one issue. The purpose of the review panel and the subsequent proposed regulations is not to burn down the village to prove that we can save it. On the contrary, the purpose was to identify why the population isn't responding to management and to try to get that management on target and focused on the problems facing the resource. The panel concluded that the problem is multifactorial, and we've heard that from many of the fishermen today and the scientists and other stakeholders today. Obviously, we have water quality problems. We've had substantial environmental degradation during the past 15 years. We've had deterioration of water quality, substantial losses of SAV, substantial losses of oysters. We've had a lot of habitat losses. We've also had an increase in predation, likely, between the striped bass and other species. These have all taken a toll on the crab. But it's in the context of that degraded environment that the scientists concluded that overfishing is clearly occurring on a consistent basis. In 7 of the last 10 years, we've had an exploitation rate in excess of the overfishing threshold, and we've been substantially over the target in 9 out of the last 10 years. The responsibility to manage this resource in a manner compatible with sustainable management practices and to ensure that our fishing level is at an appropriate level rests squarely on this commission. This is not something we can shirk from. The problem's not going to go away. We have to come to terms with it. And collectively, working together with industry, we have to identify where the problems in the fishery are. But this is something we have to come to terms with, and that's what we're doing today. The blue crab resource is a public resource. It's easily among the state's most important resources economically, socially, biologically, and the long-term health and sustainable management are in the interest of all Virginians. And today I would say that we're all affected. Ernie has just gone through some of these options. Having sat through a very long CRAB committee meeting earlier this month and worked through these issues, I think there are several trade-offs that can be made without substantially compromising the conservation benefits. And I think today we clearly have to take substantial and focused action to achieve conservation gains. The specific recommendations of the committee included, in lieu of any additional restrictions on peeler size limits or sign restrictions, a substitute motion that was to reduce effort by 10 to 30%, and that was offered as a trade-off. However, I think on the peeler minimum size, staff has told us that a 3.25-inch minimum size or 3.5-inch size would result in very substantial conservation benefits on the order of 32 to 40% respectively. And I think those benefits are too great to forego today. I don't think we can afford to pass those up. I think the enforcement protocol, though, gets specifically at the concerns that were raised by committee members and raised by industry members in that discussion. They had specific concerns about inspection officers coming on board the boat, culling through all the peelers, causing problems for the fishermen. And I think what's been proposed as a protocol will allow us to communicate to the fishing public that the inspection isn't going to be burdensome. They're just going to inspect one container, and if the container is found to be out of compliance, the entire catch of peeler crabs would be dumped overboard. To that end, in the regulation, Jack, that you've given us this draft language on page 4 of 5, I think that would need to be clarified to say return all peeler crabs on board the vessel to the water alive rather than simply all crabs. In other words, if you had to catch a hard crabs and peeler crabs, all peeler crabs would be dumped overboard. So I think one trade-off, though, to be made, I think we should go with staff's recommendation for the peeler size, with the exception of a 3.25-inch minimum on the seaside, eastern shore. I think that the white sign issue, as Ernie pointed out earlier, is an area where there's substantial waste. Talking to fishermen, 8 or 9 out of 10 have said that it's quite a wasteful fishery, although the waste varies at times throughout the season. Having said that, I think that regulation isn't quite ready to roll because there were still substantial concerns about the ability of the commission to enforce that, and I think you've heard some of that today. As a trade-off, I think it would be appropriate to go ahead and advertise the committee's recommendation for a 10 to 30% reduction in effort in lieu of doing the white sign today. So, Mr. Chairman, I would offer a motion at this point, if you're ready for one, to advertise a number of options for April and one option for March and then offer a separate motion for what's in front of us.
Okay. Why don't we put to help me out a little bit, put the April long-term ones back up on the board that we had, please, Jack. Realizing we could have some more discussion after this comes up.
That's fine.
All right, sir. The first motion.
First motion would be to include the following options for April.
This for the record, this will be a vote for a public hearing or a vote to advertise for public hearing the following measures that will be taken up at the April meeting.
And that would be staff's recommendations with several modifications, namely that we reduce effort in peeler pots and crab pots by 10 to 30%. Closure of the blue crab sanctuary as early as April 15. Use of the 2 3/8 cull rings in hard crab pots and all tribs and cull rings and peeler pots. Closure of the entire crab dredge fishery, or as an option, a shortening the crab dredge season. And I would just leave that at any changes in the season. Also changes in bushel limits, so that we have a full range of options on that managing that fishery, and implementation of a 6.5-inch maximum size on female crabs. Also, that we consider recreational pot reductions. Also, that we advertise for if a crab license holder is convicted of 2 crab violations in one season, they appear in front of the commission to review the status of their license. and that would be a motion for an April public hearing.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'd like to make an amendment to the motion if I can.
We can get a
if
I need to see if I can get a second to the motion.
Second, okay.
Second by Mr. Holland. Mr. Fox.
On the recreational pots, we talked, Charles Williams started talking about water quality, and several other people talked about water quality, and then at the end, and I think it was Ernie that pointed out there's not much we can do about it, but I think there's one thing we can do about it. The watermen know how badly they've been hurt by poor water quality. Mr. Moore emphasized that we have had some successes in the General Assembly in getting some changes in the laws made, so we're moving forward, but I think very slowly. I think if we take action to set the recreational pot limit at 1, not 2, which we can't do, I understand, but we can ask the General Assembly to do, and for that extra permit that takes you up to 5, just do that, do away with that.
Is that in regulation or code, Jack? I can't remember. That's regulation? That's fine. Thank you.
But if we do that, then we are attempt to do the 1. We are sending a message to the general public that there's a serious problem here, and maybe we can get some support on some issues that will help the water quality. And so I would hope that you could amend your motion to
the amendment is to reduce that we suggest to the General Assembly a reduction from 2 crab pots per person to 1 per person, or if we can massage it a little bit better, 1 per pier per person, something like that, so make it so that we have liberty to massage the wording so it's more enforceable. And your reduction on the recreational license, which is currently at 5, to what?
That's the regulation, right?
The regulation. In other words, eliminate the entire...
Eliminate that.
Just to clarify, I wonder if the maker of the amendment would offer, the one offering the amendment would accept a range of reductions in recreational crab pot licenses and a range of reductions in the recreational gear allowed in code. That is either to 1 per person or a cap number per pier.
Sure.
Okay. That's.
Is that in the seconder?
I'll accept.
Jack, do you
I have another question, clarification from
Let me make sure that, Jack, do you understand what's been, okay, go ahead.
The closure of the entire crab dredge fishery, or as an option, shortening the crab dredge season, would you be willing to include common area closures to take care of the hard bottom problem?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Would
that okay?
I'll accept.
Some questions were brought up about the sponge crab industry as a whole, and I know we hadn't addressed that for future discussion. I didn't know if you wanted to add that onto the list, or if we just wanted to take that as a longer-term measure.
One of the things that was suggested to me by industry just yesterday pertained to the actual spawning time when the sponge crabs are the most prevalent. And it was suggested by industry that you may want to consider taking off 10 days during the month of July that prohibit any crabbing whatsoever, because if you're out there crabbing at all and you pull up the sponge crab, of course, there's been some study done that stresses it. So you may want to consider that. I know that's additional time off, but it also comes at a time where maybe the watermen need time to clean their pots, take a break, whatever they want to do. But that was suggested to me by industry yesterday. Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up on that point and make one clarification. We did discuss a two-week closure in the middle of the season as a committee and preferred not to change the length of the season at this point in time, but as an alternative suggested closing the sanctuary as early as April 15, just for the record. I would clarify that I said that this should be for an April hearing. I think all these things should be for an April hearing, with the one exception of the closure of the Blue Crab Sanctuary as early as April 15, which I think should be heard in March, so that we can have it in effect by April 15. In other words, if we wait until the April meeting of the commission, we would not be able to
have that in effect if we're closing at April 15th. So I think that one item ought to be in March, and the other is in April.
Okay. So, but my question goes back to the sponge crab. Do you believe, did the committee believe that this adequately addresses any of the issues that were of concern?
I think it does, Mr. Chairman. The issue with the sponge crab is that they may sponge out up to 8 times during their lifetime. So while they are perceived as being of maximum biological value as they're about to lay eggs, they are then susceptible to harvest later when they're clean and again when they're sponged out. So
okay.
we have discussed it as a committee, but we didn't have a lot of support for closing that fishery.
Mr. Schick, further questions?
No.
Okay. So the motion is on the table for these for April, with the exception of the sanctuary aspect, which is for March public hearing. Further discussion on this motion pertaining to future measures. Matters before the commission for vote. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item for discussion are the immediate measures. Dr. McConaughey.
As a scientist, we kind of took a beating today, but I would like to point out a couple of things that, yes, I agree that there's enough blame to go around for everybody. It's water quality. It's overfishing, wastage. We have to do everything we can to eliminate the waste that we see in here, whether it's in the dredge fishery or the peeler fishery or the hard crab fishery. In terms of looking at some of the issues that we're about to move into, coal rings are going to allow smaller crabs to escape. Contrary to what a lot of people think, we have large females up in Maryland. This is one population. They all come from a larval pool offshore, and it's what happens within the bay. So genetically, we're not changing those females. Most likely, we're either catching them all or they are maturing earlier in response to the overall mortality, both fishing and natural mortality pressure. So I don't think call rings are going to be involved in terms of looking at genetics. We do have some people who are trying to start to look at identifying size genes and to be able to actually prove that. But I think call rings are going to allow small crabs to escape, and you'll catch them as bigger crabs, or they will actually spawn during the period. One of the things that I think, and it's more of a long-term thing, but it's part of some of the considerations today, is crabs start to move down in the fall run. This is next year's spawning population. So as they move down to the lower part of the bay, as we open all the sanctuaries, I'd like to see sanctuaries eventually being included, maybe not as wide as they are now, but for a longer period of time to allow some of those females to actually make it down to the lower part of the bay. The winter dredge fishery is actually hitting those. The winter dredge fishery is taking the first shot at that first spawning cohort as it comes down into the bay. And I'm not sure whether we need to eliminate the winter dredge fishery, but we certainly need to figure out how to eliminate the wastage. If there is 50 to 70% wastage, we need to eliminate that and make sure that if we're capturing crabs in the winter dredge fishery, we're actually being able to. They're good. They're a product, and they may, from what we've heard, may or may not be good product, even if they are coming up as whole crabs. Agency again addresses the overfishing aspects of it, and I think there's a lot of agreement throughout all the different sectors that agency is probably not a good thing to do. So, again, habitat is certainly important in all of these things. We're not going to address habitat. Hopefully, with some of these issues and some of the actions we take today, the crab population will still be viable when we do see some habitat increase over the period of 5-10 years from now. So those are just some comments that genetically I don't think we have a problem. And someone mentioned the larvae in the bay. I spent a lot of time chasing larvae around offshore. They're offshore, so that really is not an issue. The issue is having them come back in, and that's all a physical process. But if you look at the overall history of the crabbing industry, for 50 years you saw fluctuations up and down. That was a healthy population. When you now look at it, it's dropped down, and it's down near the bottom of acceptability for over 10 years. That's not a healthy population, and it could possibly be one or two recruitment events away from collapsing. I don't like to use that word, but it's a possibility that, you know, at that low level, a recruitment failure for a couple years running might mean that we don't have any crabs to fish at all. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Dr. McConaughey. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of points on the items in front of us. The agency issue was discussed at length in the committee meeting, and the committee's preference was to go ahead and try to eliminate the most egregious, what was perceived as the most egregious misuse, if you will, of agency, that is permit stacking. So they recommended that we roll agency back to a one-to-one basis, and that's what you see in the language proposed by staff. They also recommended for 2009 that agency be eliminated except for emergency or true hardship type situations, and also develop some sort of family exemption to cover family type situations. And that, I think that idea was unanimous from the committee. It had strong support. Having said that, that agency issue for 2009 really belongs in the longer term discussion, because we are moving forward with an effort control system. We've already tasked staff with developing that. And if we end up using crab pod tags, for example, to control the effort in the fishery, the question is going to be who can use those tags? Is it going to be limited to a CFRL holder? Is it going to be more restricted than that? That's the context in which some of these concerns, I think, need to be addressed for 2009. So what's in front of us today, like Mr. Nixon pointed out, it's not a perfect cure for agency by any means, but it's a step towards eliminating permit stacking. It will curb some effort by doing that, and transfers, while they're still allowed to occur, are capped at 100 per year, roughly. So there is some curb on that now, but I think it is a meaningful step forward. There is no perfect solution to the issue at this point, but it is a meaningful step forward to try to curb effort. And one other point, Mr. Graham spoke earlier of the need to develop a network of upriver sanctuaries, and as a committee we did ask staff to go ahead and evaluate that option as well during our committee meeting. But Mr. Chairman, I would offer a motion to approve the following regulations.
Ma'am, if you're ready. If I could see if anybody else has any comment. Mr. Tankard?
My only comment is that it seems as though, as the waterman so aptly pointed out, it is water quality, and I hope the press realizes that it's not really the watermen that have spoken that have been the problem so much as it is it's been water quality. And having said that, that is one of the reasons I like all of the points that staff has recommended to us today, because it takes a little bite out of everybody, not just one group of watermen in particular. And I feel as though there's no need to be unduly harsh on one group as opposed to another, given that it's not their fault. So I agree with staff recommendation.
Mr. Schick?
There are a couple things that I do have a little discrepancy with some of that. And you know, 20 years ago when our marina was, in the wintertime, was full of oyster boats, and our loading dock in the summertime was full of crabbers bringing their pots in, and you know, we were happy to allow our facility to be used for that. Of course, now you know, I have one crabber and no oysterman, and you know, it's not because you know, they've been overfishing as much as it has been the environment. There's no doubt about it. But unfortunately, as residences put their nitrogen out on their lawns, and sewer plants continue to pump, into the river, it's going to be, the watermen that unfortunately are going to be paying, whether it's from a lower catch or from higher regulations. But I think what we have to do is definitely try to keep it as simple as possible. And we have to gear our efforts to allowing the people who do this full time to continue to do this full time, and switch the effort from part time people, opportunists, and whatnot, and so the guys that actually do this for a living can continue to do this for a living. And I would like to see the season in March continue. The 2 weeks, I think that's important for the guys that do this full time. I also would like to see the part of the white line for peelers moved to further discussion. And I think the further discussion needs to be something where it's a trigger system. One thing that's undeniable is that the dredge survey is a direct correlation to harvest. They're independent of each other. But they correlate, and I realize that taking surveys in the dead zone where crabs are dead and fish are dead, and not taking surveys in shallow areas where small crabs are, may not give an ideal picture of exactly what it is, but it gives an ideal picture of what we're going to be able to harvest, and we need to use this tool to simplify the way we manage this industry. So that's all I really have to say on that.
Further comment? As I indicated earlier, putting restrictions, making things difficult on anyone is not pleasurable unless you're just an outright sadist and you like to inflict pain. No one up here, I believe, satisfies that requisite. But at the same time, when you observe the numbers that I've observed, and I've been here 15 years, and I've watched the crab catch go down and down, and I, even before becoming commissioner, was somewhat worried about the direction we were going. To me, it's obvious, as commissioner, that something has to be done. One thing that didn't come out today, and not being a scientist, I'm not really probably the most qualified to speak on it, but I've been told and I've listened very carefully through a number of years to the scientists and the experts that have been here that this crab has a relatively short life cycle. That can be of benefit when it comes to the recovery stage. If I didn't believe in my heart of hearts that two things, number one, the measures that had been put in probably did stave off a collapse. If you look at what's going on. And number two, and most importantly today, as I sit here, that the measures that we are to take would not provide a significant benefit to the resource to prevent it from collapsing, I wouldn't support it. Quite honestly, I wouldn't support it at all. But I do believe that these measures that we've discussed today will go a long way in restoring this iconic resource of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I hope to see it turn around within the next couple of years. If we don't see it within the next couple of years by doing everything that we've done, one thing's for certain. It's definitely the water quality, it's definitely the seagrass, and it's definitely the predators, and we've done all we could do to control it. Now, going through the suite of options, the coal rings, as I understand, speaking with staff and speaking with the committees, save about 7.4% of the total crabs. The season limits, I do agree with Mr. Schick. This is something, and I think I've spoken with Dr. McConaughey and staff, that although the shortening of the season limit may be of benefit overall, but the same crabs may ultimately be caught up in the next 2 weeks anyway, and it helps the watermen as far as the market is concerned. I believe the season limit should remain at March 17th. think this Gila crab minimum crab size, Gila crab minimum size, goes a long way to saving a lot of crabs. In talking with my good friend Dr. McConaughey yesterday, he assures me that the Seaside is a separate stock altogether, so I don't believe that the 3.25 until July 16th, 3.5 on the Seaside is appropriate, but I believe it is otherwise, and I believe that this specific language mirrors our sister state to the north, who I can assure you we are diligently working together to get a grip on this problem from a Baywide perspective. The white sign peelers, I spoke with law enforcement yesterday, and I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that they could enforce this, but at the same time, if it's something that can wait, we can keep an eye on it. We'll do that. I do agree with the inspection protocol. I think that allays a lot of fears of some concern. Also makes it easier on both the watermen and law enforcement, because we don't like to get in a situation where there's disagreement on the boat between how inspections to be done. Crab sanctuary season, I think, is appropriate. The use of agents, I have significant concern with, and I'll be quite honest with you. When I said on the other side, use of agents was initially designed for those hardships that came about, and I remember specifically what they were. They were those that had medical infirmities and those that were active in the military that had to go to war or go away to serve their country. That was the intent of agents. No more, no less. It was not a mechanism that was put in place in order to increase the effort. Do I blame those that have exploited the system because it's on the books? Absolutely not. They have the right to do that. But at the same time, in order to reduce effort, I believe that the agents should go back to where it was. Finally, on the crab dredge fishery, I have defended that dredge fishery for many years based on scientific information that had been provided to me. The last crab committee indicated that it's less than 9%, I believe, of the overall catch. But in doing a little bit further research in determining, number one, how significant it is as far as fuel consumption is concerned, labor intensive, waste involved. I spoke with someone in industry yesterday that told me that an individual caught 21 barrels of dredged crabs, and of the 21 barrels, 7 were usable. Those crabs that either were caught or did not live were 96% female. Those are 96% females of the ones that survived through the year. Although it may not be but 9% on paper at the time of the catch, exponentially, we don't know exactly what that accounts for. So I think we should take a long, hard look at eliminating the crab dredge fishery. If things come back and the crabs are everywhere, and it can be determined that reinstating that fishery would not have a result that brings us back to this table or our children back to this table to have to address it later on, I wouldn't have a problem looking at it again, but it's kind of hard to convince me and convince others that when you're taking 96% females and you've got a waste that may run from 50 to 60%, maybe more, it's the right thing to do. I applaud the committee for the work that they've done in reviewing our regs. I applaud Associate Commissioner Robbins for his foresight in suggesting that we undertake this review. It's right in line with what I've been thinking. And with that, the matter is before the commission for action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo your cautious optimism that the reproductive potential of this species should allow us to make progress quickly toward recovering the health of the population. I think the matters before us right now are interim measures. They're best considered as that. We have already tasked staff with developing a long-term effort control system that will likely be the major focus of our management of this stock in the future. Today, I think it would be appropriate to approve the following measures.
Adopting this is a motion?
Yes, sir. As a motion.
Proceed.
Adopting the minimum peeler size limit as per staff's recommendation, with the exemption of a 3 1/4 inch minimum on the seaside of the eastern shore to include the enforcement protocol as drafted by staff. Leave the existing season intact without modification. Reduce agency to a 1-to-1 basis as per staff's recommendation. Require that both call rings be open everywhere as per staff's recommendation. And cap the dredge fishery as per staff's recommendation, together with the items that we've advertised for with the public hearings.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Dr. McConaughey. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all very much. I'd like to move the next item on the agenda to the summer flounder issue.